Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 8th, 2017. This is episode 1402. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Captera. Captera helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories from accounting to workflow management. Visit Captera.com/tech guy to start your free search today. Oh, hi. How are you? Hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here. I didn't see you come in. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and, you know, all the digital stuff, the technology that's pervading our lives in every single place, every nook and cranny. And I mean nooks and crannies. I mean with health and fitness devices. And there's a thing you could put under your mattress in your bed to monitor your sleep. I can just go on and on and on. On and on. I just saw there's a new tattoo ink that somehow monitors your glucose levels and changes color. It's like a mood tattoo. When your glucose gets high, be something for diabetics. That's pretty cool. Hey, we could talk about anything in this marvelous tech world. That's what we're here for today and every week at 888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. We talk about home theater. Scott Wilkinson will be joining us in about 15, 20 minutes. Talk about that. Talk about digital photography, smartphones, of course, smart watches. 888-ASK-LEO. There's a website, too, I should mention, because I don't want you furiously writing down what things I say while you're driving. But you don't have to, because it's all being furiously written down by James DeRuvo, who puts it up on our website at techguylabs.com, so that way you don't have to. And it's free. There's no sign-up. There's no, you know, I don't want your email address. Just use it, techguylabs.com. Ah, what's been going on in this world? I have to say, I talked about it last week, but now I've had a full week with the Amazon's newest Echo, the Echo Show. And I'll forgive you for not knowing which is which, because they now have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and soon to be 6 different kinds of Echoes just in the Amazon family. And then there's other companies making Echo devices. There's even going to be Amazon Echo in your car, and it's everywhere. And admittedly, Amazon, probably isn't advanced in things like artificial intelligence compared to Google, let's say. But man, they just own this space. And the more I use the Echo Show, well, first of all, the more I buy. I got two at first, one for my mom and one for me. And then I got one for my home office and my work office. So I don't know. I'm up to 4 now. One in our kitchen, one in my home office, one right in front of me right now. And I tell you why a couple of things I like about it. First of all, it's very similar to the other Echoes where you talk to it and she responds. This one, they put decent speakers in. This is the best speakers of any Echo. So the music and the voice, everything's good. And they also put a screen in it, which is great. For instance, if you have one of these things and you want to watch the video of me, of us doing the show or of any of the shows I do on my podcast network, because we're on YouTube Live, we're streaming, you can just say, Echo, watch Twit Live on YouTube. Oh, I just did it.
Playing top result. By the way, YouTube restricted mode is currently on. To turn it off, go to restrict access in settings.
That's meaningless. I should do that just so I don't hear that anymore. But now it's going to play me. It's playing our Echo, stop. Because I don't, you will get echo from the Echo, which is kind of interesting. Echo, stop. Echo, home. I call it Echo, so I don't trigger yours at home. If I used her name, it would trigger it. But then I've named mine Echo, so now I trigger mine. So I don't know what to do. The Amazon voice device, I guess I'll call it. But that's pretty neat. That's one use of the screen. There's also song lyrics. But the thing I've really been getting into, and I know my mom is probably watching because I gave her one, and we've had a couple of drop-ins, and it's just awesome. It's just awesome. She says drop in, on Kitchen, and because she's on my Echo account, my network, she just drops in on my Echo in the kitchen, and we can talk. I see her. She sees me. Now, as I mentioned last week, we kind of misunderstood how drop-in worked. It doesn't turn on a camera right away. You have to tap it and approve it. But it does turn on the voice right away. So it's it's like a video intercom system, but you have to approve the video. I love that. Anyway, somebody asked me, oh, my dentist. Why is it dentists? Dennis, why is it you always want to have a conversation where my mouth is Dennis, I've got cotton and all sorts of stuff in my mouth, and including his hands. And he says, so what's the hot tech gadget these days? I love my dentist. But he's a geek, right? He's a gadget guy. And so I thought about it and I realized, you know, the hot gadget right now these days, Echo Show, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. I'm blown away. Another thing I could do with my mom is I can put a photo. She could ask for a photo album up there and do a slideshow, which is great. It's very exciting. I like it a lot. I don't know. I didn't mean to do an ad for it. I just like it. What else happened? Just looking at all the news headlines I've gathered during the week. Did you get a Samsung Galaxy S8? I did. Like it. Nice phone. Remember it had a special button on the side there? Underneath the volume buttons, there's a single dedicated button dedicated to its Bixby voice assistant. And when it first came out, Samsung said, well, yeah, don't get too excited. It works in Korea, but it's not going to work anywhere else for a while. You press the button and it gives you some, you know, like weather and your contacts, your calendars and, you know, stuff like that. But the voice assistant isn't working. And now Samsung says, yeah, it's going to be a while. inevitable, isn't it? If you just had it as a software feature and you mentioned it, no big deal. But no, you put a dedicated hardware button on the phone that does one and only one thing, can't be remapped. Guarantee you that thing won't work. Poor Samsung. Actually, why am I saying poor Samsung? This quarter, they're more profitable than Apple. So no poor Apple, no poor Samsung. They're the opposite. Although Apple might be worried a little bit. You know, they're in a big lawsuit with a company called Qualcomm. Qualcomm makes the radio in many phones, licenses the patents. They kind of own many of the smartphone patents. They invented a lot of them. It's legitimately own them. And if you make a smartphone these days, you'll be paying money, not a huge amount, but a couple of bucks per phone, to license those patents from Qualcomm. Except Apple, which had been, I think it was like $1 billion a year, paying Qualcomm, decided this year, nah, we don't want to pay them anymore. So they sued them. They said they stopped payments, then we're not going to pay you, and we think that it's a unfair damper on innovation that you should have those patents. Yeah, and I bet you if you use one of Apple's patents, you could say the same thing to them. They just go, yeah, you're right. Of course. Go ahead. Use our patents. You don't have to pay. So Qualcomm's countersuing. I mean, it's just a mess because Qualcomm says, well, you got to pay us. Now Qualcomm has gone to, well, they've basically gone nuclear. They've gone to the, I can't remember what the body is, but the international trade body in the United States and said, we want you to block all Apple phones that have an Intel chip instead of a Qualcomm chip. See, Apple this year in the iPhone 7 decided they were going to kind of weaken Qualcomm's stranglehold and bought radios from Intel, the data radios, the LTE radios. In fact, I have an Apple phone with Intel radios. And the Intel radios are slower than the Qualcomm radios. So you know what Apple's response to that was? They slowed down the Qualcomm radios because they want all phones to be equal. Qualcomm didn't like that. They're suing them for that. Now Qualcomm says, we want you to prevent importation into the U.S. of all iPhones with Intel chips. I call that the nuclear option. Holy cow. Hey, let's go to the phones. I want to talk to you. 8888-ASK-LEO. See, I have my... am I unreasonably enamored of this thing? Perhaps. Perchance. I don't know if I can show it. I can't quite get it on. But see, I have my Galapagos pictures. I changed it. You heard me do it. I said use that album as my... my desktop background. They don't rotate real fast, but maybe every 30 seconds or a minute I'll get a new picture, which is nice. And then so they have the time, the temperature, the weather. I don't think I can touch anything to make it do anything. It is a touch screen, but yeah. Oh, you get the things to try. This is one of the things that a screen helps Amazon, because this is one of the problems, of course, is knowing, well, what do I do with this? So it's nice that they show you some things to try. They also show you your calendar, and this gets modified depending on you. Oh, look, I got a new picture. You get a blue-fitted booby. So watch this. This is really cool. Echo, watch Twit live on YouTube.
Playing top result from YouTube.
Watch Twit live.
Isn't that cool? Echo stop.
Isn't that cool?
Echo stop.
Echo stop.
Echo home. Ooh, I was in a kind of weird echo loop. Echo, what time is sunset?
Sunset is at 8:36 p.m.
So it uses the screen to its advantage. Echo, what's the weather?
Currently, in Petaluma, it's 82 degrees with clear skies and sun. You can expect more of the same today, with a high of 91 degrees and a low of 52 degrees.
I like how it uses the screen. Echo, let's Rickroll.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, thank goodness. The only thing that's weird, it takes a while to get used to. You have to, I guess eventually it would revert to home, but you also could say echo home. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's a good question. When is Prime Day? It's soon, right?
Yesterday.
Oh, it started. Oh, I could ask her. Echo, what are my Prime deals?
Here are my deals.
Ziploc slider storage bags. I have way too many of those. Soap. Oh, these are Echo deals. Yeah, none of this I want. Now, I wonder if this is based on my previous orders. No. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I bet you Heather Hammond already knew that. She's here to answer the phones. Hi, Heather.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Woo.
So,
what have I been up to lately?
What you been up to lately?
You know, I went to ID 10 Fest.
That's right.
The and Burger Boogaloo.
And what is Burger Boogaloo?
Iggy Pop played. It's a John Waters associated event.
He's older than me, and he looks like he's 30.
He's pretty groovy.
I don't understand, except for his face, which looks like he's been rolling on glass, which he actually has.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, Iggy. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Who did you think I was talking about?
Waters.
Oh, John Waters. No, I love John. He's around too still, huh? Still have that little pencil thin mustache?
Yep.
That's a
great
look.
Suits.
Yep.
Crazy suits.
Crazy. So you've been answering the phones. I can tell because there's a jam-packed bunch of blinking lights right in front of me. Which of these blinking lights should I punch?
Well, he actually called in first, and I know you really like him. So we're going to talk to your pal in Providence.
Oh.
Jay.
Hey, Jay. Thank you, Heather. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Not bad. I thought I would check and see if you have any favorites for tablets where Wi-Fi plus cellular is required.
You know, I hate to say it because it irks me because they're so expensive. But really, when it comes to tablets, I think Apple just owns it all. You can get, and certainly they make Wi-Fi tablets, but they're $649 or and up. They're expensive. They're as much as a regular computer. And I would recommend, if you get an iPad, getting the even more expensive iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch, which is just a really nice tablet. Now, otherwise, you're going to go with Android probably. Although there are, I mean, are you, see, when I don't think of Windows machines as tablets, but I guess they technically are. Are you looking for a tablet operating system or Windows?
Tablet.
Yeah. See, I think Windows 10, I mean, the Surface Pro, for instance, really is a tablet with an attachable keyboard. But I don't consider that a tablet. I consider that more like a, you know, laptop. Samsung's Notes are pretty good, and they do make the Notes available, and the Galaxy Tabs, they make those available with LTE as well. A couple of choices for you. I like Apple's strategy a little over Samsung's. I believe with Samsung, you'll go to the carrier, and you'll buy it from the carrier. You will get a subsidy that way, but it's like buying a phone, and then it has the carrier SIM. Apple sells their tablets direct with a universal SIM, and you can switch carriers. You can be AT&T this month and T-Mobile next month, whatever suits you. So I like that also. I think given the range of tablet software for the iPad, Apple's significant investment into R&D for the iPad, as witnessed by the new 10.5-inch, even though the tablet sales are down, I really feel like Apple won't give up. They're saying, no, it's going to be big, and we believe in it, and so we're really putting some money into it. Now, IOGeek is pointing out you can get the base iPad 9.7, the low end, for $329 now, but you'll have to add about $130 for LTE, which is wireless. So that'll take you a little bit closer to a little bit over $500. Does that answer your question? Do you have other thoughts about it? I mean, would you prefer to do Android?
I don't have a preference. That is, I keep hearing that they're kind of connected in terms of their security. The only thing that I have heard that might be noteworthy is that there are some Chromebooks you can run Android on, but I don't.
That is a good point. In fact, better than an Android tablet would be a 2-in-1 Chromebook, Acer and Asus, Samsung sell these. They fold over. They're about the same price as an iPad, about $500. They fold over, so it's not as light as a tablet because it still has a physical keyboard attached to it. But you can run Android apps on it, which means you can run Android tablet apps as well as the Chrome OS. So that's not a bad choice. It's not as light. Nice thing about an iPad is, you know, they're thin and light. And when you attach a keyboard to it, and the new, and with iOS 11 coming in the fall, and I've been using that on my iPad Pro, it's pretty capable. Plus, you're going to see companies like Adobe start to release apps. For instance, Adobe Lightroom. Adobe has said we want to make our iPad app as capable as our desktop version. So I think you're seeing companies buy into Apple's vision of the future, which is iPad replaces laptops.
But now how about the possibility of cellular on Chromebook?
The possibility of what?
Cellular, using cellular data.
Yes, you can on some. Not Google's, oddly enough. But I think Samsung offers an LTE version of Samsung. I like the Plus. You don't need to get the Pro, which is more expensive. That's got an Intel chip in it. I bought a second Samsung Chromebook Plus for my son, who's going to was a freshman in high school. He loves it, and I believe you can get it with LTE. If you look at the Samsung site, certainly some of the Asus's and Acer's you can get with LTE. And now the question is chip, who the carrier and all that. And I'm not sure how they deal with that. You know, in the past, what I've said is, well, just you're going to have to buy it from a carrier, but I don't think that's the case with Chromebooks. I wonder what Samsung does. Does anybody know Samsung Chromebook Plus LTE? I'm just going to Google that. Yeah, they do. It looks like they do make an LTE version, but I don't know what carrier it works with. Maybe you go to a carrier and you put a SIM in it. Maybe that's how it works. I don't know. Love to know if somebody has some experience with that. What works for them? And what carrier works for them? It's a shame we have to have carriers. I mentioned this last week. My friend Mike Elgin has written a great article in Computer World in which he says it's over for the carriers because as we increasingly move into this direction of using data for voice as well as everything else, you won't need a cellular carrier. You just need internet, which may be Wi-Fi. I guess in some areas it's still going to be LTE, but the carriers are going to have to rethink themselves, just as cable companies have had to rethink themselves, right? Used to be if you wanted to watch HBO, you had to have a cable company. If you wanted to watch your local channels and you didn't have an antenna, you had to have a cable subscription. And then they added, oh, and we'll also be internet service providers or high-speed internet service providers. Increasingly, people are saying, well, I don't need the cable subscription. I'll just use him. I'll use you as an internet service provider and get my HBO and everything else over the internet. And I think the same thing is going to happen to phone companies. Cable companies were smart. They saw this coming, and so they gradually raised the cost of their internet to the point where they're going to make the same amount of money. Of course they are. Why would they accept anything less? So you don't save money cord cutting anymore. I really don't think you do. Maybe you do. You get to pick a little. You get to be a little more discriminating in what you pick. You don't have to buy a big old package. So eventually, you'll be able to, as long as you have data on your tablet or your laptop, you'll be able to make phone calls, everything. You won't. The phone will be just another computer, essentially. And phone calls will be everywhere. 8888 Ask Leo. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up. Hello, Scott-a-Fred.
There you are.
Scott-a-Beth, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How about yourself?
A cup of coffee here.
Ah, okay, good. By the way, just FYI.
Yes, yes, yes.
I shall not be here next week.
Okay. Let's make a note of that.
Got a family thing to do.
All right. No Scott. But you will fill in for me in September.
Mm-hmm. You
Yay,
betcha.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to be gone three weekends this time, but I don't dare not record shows. They really act funny if I don't.
They don't want reruns.
No, they really don't. It's his official theme song for reasons no one really understands. They're buried in the mists of time, but fortunately, it does signal that Scott Wilkinson has arrived on the scene. He is our home theater geek. That's the name of his podcast, Home Theater Geeks, at twit.tv/HT. He also is editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. And you actually, we were talking about cord cutting. I really think that the same thing the cable companies are going through with people turning down their TV offerings and doing everything over the internet and reducing the cable companies to internet service providers is going to happen to cellular companies as well.
Oh, that could very well be.
They'll just be data companies because you don't need anything more than data to do phone calls and texting and all the other things you've been using
and
the phone
TV
system.
And movies
and
everything else.
Yeah.
That's right. In fact, I just wrote a story on AVS called basically Get Live TV Online because there are now several services that will provide you with essentially what a cable or a satellite company provides over the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, and I saw that Hulu is now offering HBO subscriptions.
Yep, that just got announced. It's so funny. I posted this piece, and then like 2 minutes later, I saw the news that Hulu
of course.
Live TV had added HBO. Because I had in this list, I listed what was missing from each service, because I think that's important.
Yeah, you have to figure out what you're going to get, yeah.
What you're going to get and what you're not going to get.
Right.
And Hulu was one of them that did not have HBO until about 5 minutes after I posted this piece.
Right. Now, so I have, and it depends on, I guess, your geographical location, because here in the San Francisco Bay Area, many of these guys like PlayStation View and Sling TV and YouTube carry live locals.
Yes. But you're right. That completely dependent upon your geography. Usually it's the major markets right now. So it's San Francisco Bay Area. It's L.A. It's Chicago. It's New York.
Yeah.
Places like that.
Why is that? Is that because they have to make deals with these TV stations?
I assume so. I don't really know why it is. It's just, you know, it's a problem. The other problem that I identified in this article is true a la carte. This is the holy grail, right? To be able to, instead of cable and satellite companies say, well, you can have this package, which has these channels, or that package, which has those channels. These online live TV services basically do the same thing. They have four different packages or three different packages or something, and they each have, you know, you pay more and you get more channels. What I want, and what doesn't exist yet, is I want Discovery Channel, TLC,
History. Yeah, you just want this and you don't want that.
Exactly.
This is the same thing. I guess I have this bad habit of using history as a measure, but this is exactly what the record companies went through. They went kicking and screaming because they knew that many bands couldn't make an album full of great songs. They could make one hit, though, and so they'd bundle them all together, and they really didn't want to sell singles. They wanted to sell albums. They made more money that way, even though users said, no, I just want the hit. I don't want the filler. And it was Apple that ended up changing all that with their 99-cent singles. I mean, record industry had always made 45s, but that was a small part of the business.
Yeah, and that was long gone by this time.
Yeah, yeah. They wanted to sell albums. And we, as users, demanded unbundling, in effect.
That's right. And so, you know, I hope that someday in the future, not too far in the future, this something similar will happen with TV channels, you know, so that I can, like, I have zero interest in sports. So I would not want any of the sports channels, you know, but I would want Discovery and, you know, the channels that the show nature shows and that kind of stuff, as well as locals. And that's the other weird thing. The locals that we were talking about earlier that are only really available in the major markets, those aren't even 100%. Some of those services don't offer, for example, CBS. Which has been very late to the streaming party. A couple of them now.
CBS didn't want to do it.
They didn't want to do it.
That's the same thing has happened in streaming radio. I know people don't pay attention to it. But the company that owns this show is iHeartMedia. Yep. They have an app. But CBS stations are not on that app. And they're not on TuneIn, which is kind of agnostic. It has many. They have, because CBS has their own app. Hulu messed this up for TV because of the different stakeholders in TV in Hulu. They said, "Oh no, no, we're not going to. We won't sell it individually. We'll go through Hulu." And then they were at each other's throats because some of them said, "No, you got to have ads." Some of them said, "No, you have to have subscriptions." Some of them said, "No, you have to have ads and subscription." And they couldn't agree.
Yeah,
it's a mess.
It's a total mess. There are also retransmission agreements.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
thanks
and
to the FCC and the cable. So that's the cable industry, and that's, you know, that goes back to the cables, because local television didn't want cable to carry them.
Yes, exactly.
They said, "Well, wait a minute. You're just going to carry our signal?" And the cable company said, "Well, yeah, you can get it over an antenna too." Well, that's different on your cable. You're making money off of it. We want money. And that was a mess. And that's, I think my point is that we're in the same mess. We've seen this mess before.
Yes.
And I don't think there's, for instance, I don't think there's somebody like Apple. Maybe it could be Apple. I don't think so. That's going to come along and do the same thing to television that Apple wants to, but I don't think they have the clout to do to television what they did to the record industry. They're not going to be able to unbundle.
Yeah, but did they have the clout in the record industry when they started that process?
I think what happened with the record industry is snuck up on them, because the record industry thought when they first licensed stuff to Apple, they said, well, this is time. You know, nobody's going to buy digital music. And so they gave Apple rights they may not have given up had they realized what would happen. iTunes now is the number one record store in the world by far. And now they have lots of clout. So I think that the record industry, which fought, they did fight Steve Jobs at first over 99-cent singles.
They did.
But
they
thought, okay, we'll let the kid try it. Because he's such a pain in the butt. We're going to let him try it.
Maybe he'll go away.
Yeah, but it won't. It's not going to be an important part of our business. It's not going to hurt our album business. Wrong. Now we know. Right. Now we know. The cable companies and the television companies, the production companies can't go in saying, that Apple, they're harmless. They know. So Apple's been trying to make these deals and can't. Everybody's trying to talk to these guys and say, look, this is what consumers want. But there,
that's right.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever see the unbundling. In fact, some people have said we're seeing rebundling.
Mm.
Certainly
a lot of these services, all these services have these bundles.
Yeah.
Just no question about it.
Yeah.
Another thing that they offer that I think is kind of cool is cloud-based DVR. Most of them let you record the shows that are live. And I question this, that because, you know, a lot of these shows, episodic TV anyway, is available online anyway.
Yeah.
So why record it? But
that's one of the things I like about YouTube TV is it has a built-in DVR. Actually, many of these do.
And a lot of them do.
Yeah, it makes it very easy. You just press a button, and now you've got a recording of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
DirecTV Now doesn't. So I think it's one of the only ones that doesn't. But
so you've do you have like a table on your article of all the capabilities?
Just a list, yeah. Oh,
see, that's what we really need because consumers have this problem. They don't know what they're going to get.
Exactly. I tried to make this as comprehensive as possible, and I included what devices you can receive the stuff on as well.
Is it you say celebrate Cut the Cord Day? Was it yesterday?
Cut the Cord Day was yesterday.
Really?
It was a holiday basically started by TCL.
The TV company.
Yeah, they make Roku TV.
I know. I bought one for my mom.
There you go.
Because I didn't want to have a separate Roku and a separate TV.
Exactly.
And she loves it. She has movie night.
Yep,
plus,
exactly.
she can watch our show on it. Because we're on YouTube Live. Scott Wilkinson, find him at twit.tv/HTG and read his article at avsforum.com. Cut the Cord Day.
Cut the Cord Day. Yep.
We probably should rename that. Somebody in the chat room says, I cut the cord and all the power went out. It's not that cord. Not that cord.
Not that cord. Don't cut that cord.
Ah. All right, I'm gonna give you the con here.
Ah, thank you very much.
You can take her away.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I now have a new X chat client, new Skype. By the way, Leo, are you still there?
Yeah, your Skype is way out of sync.
You know, I was forced to do this. I was using an old version of Skype, and it was fine. And then at some like last Tuesday, Microsoft, I guess, basically cut me off, said, we've signed you out of your Skype program because it's out of date. It's too old. You can't use it anymore. And I tried to download one, and I must admit I had not kept my operating system up to date, and that's why the old system worked.
What computer are you using?
It's a MacBook Pro.
How old is it?
It's 3 or 4 years old. I was on Mac OS 10.8, and but now I couldn't use Skype anymore. And so in order to do my podcast, I scrambled around. I upgraded to the latest, which is 10.12 or whatever it is. I don't go by those names. Those are silly. Sierra. 10.12. But then I had to download a new version of Skype, the latest version of Skype, which has this lip sync issue. Josh also told me that the sound quality isn't as good. What's your opinion?
The sound quality is fine, but
okay. But it's a lip sync.
I am worried a little bit about the lip sync. Hi, come on in. Hey,
I don't know what to do about it. Any and all suggestions?
Well, I'm looking at Alex Gumpel right now. I don't.
Yeah, he was. I had him looped in my email thread about. I'm going to have to do this because otherwise I have no Skype.
So you're up to date on Mac OS now?
I am, yeah.
Well, there's a few things we can try. I don't know. It's not a bandwidth issue, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
You can try newer hardware, something faster.
Well, no, it's only a couple years old. It's plenty new.
Yeah, we have people using older laptops. I don't.
Yeah, this isn't that old, and it's certainly. I mean, it's an i7 processor with. With an SSD, 512 gig SSD, so, you know, it's fast. The processor can handle the new OS, no problem. It's just that new version of Skype.
Yeah, we have been having this problem with people,
We have been having it with other people as well. I know Andy's had that problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there'll be an update, presumably.
We hope there'll be an update that will fix it.
Well, you know what? Web 4158 in the chat room is saying, try running Skype on my Windows laptop.
Well, that's certainly one option if you have one.
I do have one. I only use it for calibrating TVs. That's the only thing I use it for.
Oh, there you go.
But I could, you know, I could try to set it up for Skype as well and see if that works.
Yeah.
But yeah, this lip sync issue, I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. Well, it's probably nothing for you to do. I think
probably nothing I can do.
Yeah, we've seen it happen with other hosts before.
Some are worse than others.
Yeah. We've never figured out what it is.
But it seems to be something that Skype changed a year ago, and going forward, it's been like this.
Yeah.
Which is why the old version seemed to work fine for him. But
right.
No updating.
Well, you know, they don't do Genlock, so the audio and video are in no way really synced. They just kind of count on it syncing somehow and magically. And I suspect whatever they were doing has changed. You going to stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure. Happy
to. Thank you, Scott. Now, see, you're playing some interesting oldies here, Michael Kozio, our musical director. Now I just want to sit and listen. But this is not a music station. This is a talk station. This is talk radio, so I guess I better talk. Oh, I love this song. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. And I want Dusty Springfield to get a couple of cents in her pay envelope this week. 8888-ASK-LEO website, techguylabs.com. On we go with the phones. And Keith, he's on the line from Orange County.
Hey, Leo. Boy, those are some really oldies.
Yeah, I guess Michael gets in a mood sometimes.
You're making me feel like I'm 18 again. I know you're a big Amazon dot. An Echo fan and stuff, but I found three things that have very very much soured me on the Echo Dots.
Okay,
and I wanted to run them by you. The first one that kind of irritated me is that Amazon has kind of quietly lowered the warranty on the Echo Dot to 90 days. And I know there's a few websites that have talked about it rather disparagingly, and I agree with them. I think 90 days is a bit greedy for a $50 device.
Yeah,
I don't think people would buy a toaster for $50 if it didn't have a year warranty.
Okay. Yeah, you shouldn't buy one then. It doesn't bother me. I have a number of dots, and none of them have failed, so I guess it never really... investigated.
The way I found out about it is I had a problem on the first one that I had bought. I've got two.
Right.
And this is a bug that I think that the dot has, and that is it seems to want to connect to a Bluetooth speaker. I have two dots. I don't have an Echo, and I don't have the new show. But I've got three or four really nice Bluetooth speakers. I've got my favorite one is a little one called a Jam Replay. I don't know if you know about that one.
I do. Yeah.
Great little speaker. I got a couple big brick size Bluetooth speakers, but I use the Jam Replay a lot just to build station around the house and listen to, like, even your show. And what I found out recently is both my Echoes will fight over that Bluetooth device the minute I turn the Bluetooth device on. The Echo is not waiting for me to ask it to connect to the speaker. And so that's beginning to be a real problem.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the Echo's fault or Bluetooth's fault. That's probably kind of an issue in the Bluetooth spec. I've had this happen with my iPhone, where it will decide to suddenly use a different Bluetooth device. It's paired to so many Bluetooth devices. Actually, and to be fair, it's not just the iPhone. My Google Pixel does it, too. That every once in a while, I'll just go, hey, you know what? I should pair with this instead.
Yeah.
Oh, I just saw that. Bye. And it's frustrating. In the middle of a phone call, all of a sudden you don't hear anything, and then you realize, oh, it's gone off to pair with my laptop for some reason.
And I've had to tell the Echoes two or three times to disconnect from the speaker. It'll disconnect.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
And it'll reconnect right away.
Yeah, this I haven't experienced because I wire my dots into speakers. In fact, one of the reasons I like the dot, I have it in the bedroom and some other places, is because I can put good speakers on it and use it as a stereo.
Yeah.
And I find that works quite well, but I do that via wire. So I haven't experienced that problem, but I'm not surprised. Bluetooth has this problem in general. Bluetooth is far from a perfect technology, and I'm not sure I blame the dot on that.
Yeah. Well, it led to the problem in that at one point I told it to disconnect from the speaker, which I assumed it did, and probably reconnected. And then I turned the speaker off, and then I went to talk to the dot, And all I got was the circular LED, you know, that was responding, no voice. And this went on for a couple of days, and I unplugged the Echo.
How close are the dots? I mean, how do they... They must be both fairly proximate to the Bluetooth speakers.
No, in some cases, I have the speaker as far away as 30, 40 feet.
Huh.
So I called Amazon tech support, which is the worst tech support I have ever seen in my life. It's out of the Philippines, and this is like talking to your stupid cousin in Tonopah.
Well, the good news is you only paid $50 for that dot. Imagine if you had the same problem with $230 Echo Show.
Exactly.
It'd be even more frustrating.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I count myself lucky. I haven't had any problems. Nothing's failed, and so I haven't had to find out about the bad warranty and the bad customer service. But it's a point well taken.
Yeah. They don't know about it. I spent half an hour with them, and they were ready to. You know, they said, "Well, we can give you a partial refund on it, or sell you another one." So they don't even know about it.
My suspicion is you'd have the same problem because I don't think it's the dot. I think it's Bluetooth.
Well, it's happened with multiple... I see. You mean the technology, not the speaker.
I think it's a failing of the technology, yeah.
Okay. Now, last one here is the reason I bought the second Echo was this drop-in feature. Now, every tech site I've seen talking about it as if it's already available using drop-in between dots within your house or Echoes within your house, and there is absolutely no way on earth to get it to work.
Really? Because it's working on all my Echoes.
Within your house?
Yep. In fact, I can drop in right now with my house. I can go, Echo, drop in on kitchen.
Yeah.
And I'll be talking to my kitchen in a second.
How did you set it up? Because here's something I noticed. I've got the Alexa app running. And there was a selection on there where you could turn in drop in. And it asks you to anybody to within your household or turn it off, right?
Yeah.
That selection is no longer there in the latest download of Alexa app, for Android at least.
Hey, I'm seeing my kitchen. I don't know what happened to you.
You're
living in an alternate universe because I use drop-in on my shows. This morning, my mom and I had a conversation. She's in Rhode Island. I'm here via drop-in.
Yeah.
I've used it to drop in to annoy my son when he's not getting up. In fact, I could do that right now. Echo, stop.
He's still sleeping?
Echo, yeah, I think so. Echo, drop in on Michael. Let's see. We might surprise him. Can your son sue you if he's 14 for embarrassing him on the radio?
I'm sure they'll try.
Hey, Michael, are you awake? Michael, are you awake? Yeah, I guess he's out of his room. So that's great because that means I can have Echo stop. I can have a conversation. I mean, it works great. I don't know why it's not working on yours. I have no idea.
I've got the latest Alexa app, and there's no way to set it up.
It's on mine, too.
Register your cell phone number, and I said, why do I need to...
Oh, okay, that's it. So, the way they figure out if you're Echo-capable is by tying your account. I think they do that to your cell phone, so I bet you that's the issue.
Hmm.
That might be the issue. That's for calling, anyway. For instance, I can't use the Echo to call another Echo unless that person's in my contacts...
Yeah.
And their cell phone is associated with their Echo account, which tells me that that's part of the drop-in, I would guess, as well.
Okay. But now, within a household, if you had multiple...
No, yeah, I understand that. I don't... Because even though it's in a household, it's still treated... You know, you're still calling over the internet, and it's still treated as a separate thing. You're not just using your Wi-Fi to talk one to the other.
Right.
You're going out on the internet and then coming back in on the internet. So I would there is a page on drop-in, and I would go check it, and I'm betting anything that's the issue is you have to associate your cell phone, the one that you use with Amazon, or phone number. I guess it doesn't have to be cell phone. You have to associate your phone number with your account, and all of the Echoes have to be on that same account. This is interesting. You know, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think I have an Echo problem. I have 10 Echoes. And I believe I've tried drop-in from one to the other on all of them, and they all work fine. Dots, the old school Echoes. I don't have any taps. I haven't tried it on the Echo Wand. I got the Wand the other day, too. You know, I'm sorry you're having a bad experience. I think you're right that Amazon probably is cheaping out on a number of things. In fact, I read a review that said they should give these away, and they probably should because I'm sure they generate revenue. It's so easy and tempting to buy stuff through the voice commands, and I do it all the time, that I think it generates more sales for them. But they don't give it away, and apparently they don't provide very good support, it sounds like, and a meager warranty, a 90-day warranty. Although, on the dot anyway, many consumer devices have 90-day warranties. I wonder, in the state of California, do they require longer warranties? I feel like they ought to, a consumer protection issue. Anyway, I apologize. I don't know what to say. I have not had any of these problems, and it's one of the reasons I am so high on Echo. Sorry, I wasn't talking to you, Echo. I think the Amazon VoIP...
I don't know that.
I know you don't. I think the Amazon Web Services stuff is great. Voice services stuff is great, and I'm very impressed with it. But you raise some issues, which everybody, I guess everybody should be aware of, these potential issues. Somebody's saying that the new Echo Dot isn't as good as the original Dot. I wonder if that's the case. The cheapest Echo out there now is the Wand. It's only $20. That shows you they can put this capability in a much less expensive device. Amazon says they want to be the most consumer-centric company in the world. Well, this would be one way to make that better, Amazon. Listen up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by a great sponsor for this show, because a lot of people call, and you probably heard it, saying, well, Leo, I'm in business X or whatever, and I need software for my business. What's the best, I don't know, accounting software or medical office management software or on and on and on. And the problem with that, of course, is that I don't know about all this software. And if you Google it, you're going to get kind of a mishmashy list. That's why I recommend Capterra. Capterra is awesome. 400 plus categories of business software. App development, business continuity, content marketing, file sharing, human resource, web analytics, 30,000 software solutions, 200,000 plus ratings and reviews. So you want to manage your medical office? All right. Medical office. So I'm going to go in. I'm going to look for medical office software. And actually, I'll just click this link. That'll make it a little faster. And then it's going to give you a listing. But this is what I really like. You can then filter the results. So all the listings have a paragraph description, the name of the software, a link to their website, and so forth. You can read more by viewing the profile, find out more about its features and capabilities, and that's what you're looking for. But I love this. On the right, you can say how many users. So you could say, I only want to see 4-star and better, let's say, and I only want to see stuff that can support up to 100 users. And I want it to be HIPAA compliant. I want it to be multi-physician, patient billing. You give it the features you want. And then you narrow it down so that you're only looking at stuff that's right for you. Then even better, see this little checkbox? Add to compare. You can say, all right, I'd like to think more about this. This is so much better than a Google search. I'll show you. I'll take down the lower third so you can see at the bottom. See, as I add them, I'm adding them to this list. And then I can say compare them. And now, this is so great, a head-to-head comparison of my three top choices with all the information you need to make a buying decision. If you're put in this task, this kind of unenviable task of figuring out what software your company should be using, you ought to know about Capterra. And you know what the best part is? It's free. Free. Free, free. Free forever. The reviews are vetted. They're verified peer reviews and ratings from people just like you. You can find articles, reports, buying guides. This is so much better than searching through search engine results or calling the tech guy. Find the software solution you need in hundreds of different categories with Capterra, Capterra. You don't even need to register. No obligation, no registration. It's free, free. That's why so many big companies use Capterra. You should too. 3 million people use Capterra. Go to Capterra, Capterra.com/tech guy. to start your free software search today. Now, of course, you can just go to Capterra.com. You'll get the same page. But if you go to Capterra.com/tech guy, then they know you heard it on the Tech Guy. And that is good for us. It helps us with the podcast. Capterra.com/tech guy. And we thank him so much for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. All right. Guess who's here? Guess who's back? It's ladies and gentlemen, Scott Wilkinson. Let me give you...
Time delay.
Yeah, apologize for his Skype. We should put something up saying, yes, we know he's out of sync. People in the chat room while you were doing your segment were saying, Leo mustn't know. Well, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? Of course I knew, but what am I supposed to do? Say, I'm not going to announce it. It's a radio show. Nobody's going to know on the radio show. And your audio's fine. And frankly... on this show and your show, probably more than 80% of the listeners are listeners. They're not viewers. We don't do a lot.
Well, actually, I asked about that. And on my particular show, it's about 60-40 audio to video.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that would make sense because it's an audio file, video file show. Yeah,
it's a video file show. And for a long time now, I have worked pretty hard to make sure I've got some graphics to show during the show.
Ah, there you go.
So
there you go. That'll do it.
There we go. So some people in the chat room are saying trying a new config file might help. Sometimes they change attributes. I don't know. I didn't really even do much of a config file as I recall on my old one, but I'll give it a shot. Web7050 is asking a question about 3D in theaters. How come 3D is still offered at cinemas, but then movie releases for home not offered? This is a very good and deep question. Remember in the past when 3D was in theaters and then it kind of went away and then it came back and then it went away. Early on, we had those red and blue glasses and then we had polarized. You know, the last time 3D was big in the home theater market was 3 or 4 years ago. And all the TV manufacturers and all the projector manufacturers, you know, they were all really going for 3D. Blu-ray 3D, movies were coming out in 3D. And then it disappeared. It went away very fast. And there is a contingent of people, certainly on AVS Forum, who are very unhappy about that because they invested a lot in their 3D Blu-rays. And now virtually all TVs, there are no TVs per se. There might be some exceptions that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but for the most part, TVs do not have 3D in them anymore. Projectors still do. And that may be part of the answer to your question, which is why is it still popular in theaters? Well, because in a commercial cinema, you've got a gigantic screen. And with a projector at home, you've probably got a much bigger screen than a TV would give you. There are a few exceptions to that too, but big screen TVs that are the size of a projected image are hugely expensive. So like five figures expensive, so or more. So I suspect that 3D is more effective the larger the screen, which is why it's still shown in movie theaters. And it's also, you know, I mean, people do like it. They don't like having to wear glasses. Okay, that's true. But they do it anyway. I mean, if they didn't like it, they wouldn't buy tickets. But IMAX, almost everything in IMAX is 3D. Most movies that come out, at least big blockbusters, are shown in IMAX 3D and in what's called Real D 3D, which is a conventional cinema but with polarized glasses. They're not shown in 3D in Dolby Cinema, but that was a choice by AMC in the United States, anyway, to not show Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos, Dolby Cinema movies in 3D. And a decision I applaud, actually, because the type of 3D that Dolby uses, I don't like. And I've said this before. It's because the glasses that you have to use for Dolby 3D are very shiny. On the inside, and I wear prescription glasses. And so there's an internal reflection thing going on between the inner surface of the 3D glasses and the outer surface of my glasses. And it causes a kind of a milky halo around the screen and even some double imaging on things like white text on a black background, like credits and stuff like that. So I'm happy that they don't do 3D in Dolby Cinema. And, you know, I think Dolby Cinema is the best theater going experience available today. IMAX is second. It's pretty close, but it's not the same. Dolby Cinema is, to me, really, really fine. And that's where I go see my movies. So I'm glad they don't do 3D because I don't like their kind of 3D. Real D 3D is pretty good, much better than this Dolby type, which is also a similar to what they use in IMAX laser theaters, IMAX regular theaters. So IMAX now has three kinds of theaters, actually. They got the few of them left that they use the old 70mm film, actual film. That's pretty rare these days. They have conventional projectors with digital projectors with bulbs in them, lamps, right, that produce white light, xenon lamps they're called. And then they have some that are laser illuminated, digital projectors that are laser illuminated with red, green, and blue lasers. Now, if you go to an IMAX with a conventional lamp-based digital projector, they'll do 3D with polarization. So they're very simple, passive glasses, pretty big. You put them on, they don't cause a problem like I've described. But a laser-based projection system has to use the same type of technology that Dolby uses, which is called spectrum separation. And it's actually pretty cool. they actually use two projectors, one of which produces a set of red, green, and blue primaries. The other one also produces a set of red, green, and blue, but they're offset. Let me see if I can do this with my fingers. They're offset by a little bit. And the glasses filter out one set for one eye and filter out the other set for the other eye. And theoretically, that's actually better than polarization, which is what Real D uses or lamp-based projectors use. Or sometimes active glasses, but that's kind of rare in commercial cinema because they're so expensive. Anyway, so depending on which kind of IMAX theater you go to, you'll see one or the other of those types of 3D. I suspect that's probably the answer to the bottom line answer to the question, probably because 3D is more effective on a larger screen. And in a commercial cinema, it's way larger than even 99.9% of home theaters. You know, the really super big home theaters maybe get up to something like what a commercial cinema does, but not by much. So that to me is the answer to that question. Emily the Strange is in the chat room. How are you? Good to see you here. Coffee and lunch. Couldn't wait. I understand that. Who just said this? Somebody here. Marsworm. Avatar sequels looking to be glasses-free 3D. I don't see how that's possible in a commercial cinema. I really don't. Unless somebody has come up with a new technology that I haven't heard of. There is such a thing as glasses-free 3D, but generally speaking, it's on flat-panel TVs, not in projected images. So I'm not quite sure how they would do it in a projected image. That I don't understand how that could be. let's see. Oh, Web 909 got a Riva Festival. Yeah, man. This is Riva's Bluetooth speaker. Anyway,
thank you,
that's
sir.
It.
Have a great week. Thanks,
you too.
I'll see you in two weeks. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. All that jazz. 88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. You can also reach us via Skype, I'm told, using Skype Out. You need to be able to call a phone. 888-827-5536. What's your experience with the Amazon Echo? Do you hate it as much as our last caller? Or are you a fan? I'm obviously a fan. I'm all in. But, you know, and when I use it, I feel like I'm in, this is science fiction. I'm in 2001, A Space Odyssey. I'm now talking to a computer and it's responding and it's doing things I like. And I feel like it's the future. I like it. Maybe that's just me. Mark, your Belinda, California is next. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
I've recently bought a camera and started getting into photography. But I'm really interested in doing some time-lapse videos.
Ooh, fun.
I've got the intervalometer. You know, I've been able to set up and, you know, take some quality pictures, but I can't find an easy-to-use software, you know? I can't put them together.
Yeah, so the intervalometer, for those who don't know, is just a little, basically it's a trigger that fires off the camera at specific intervals. You can get remotes that do this. Some cameras have it built in. The Sony's, for instance, you can download software that does this. And then if you're doing a time lapse, you might take a picture every second or every 10 seconds or every half minute, depending on how much you wanted to get into the time lapse. But the problem is now you have all these images, you need to stack them. You need to make a video out of them. There are time lapse apps out there. Tell me what camera you're using and what operating system.
It's Windows 10, and I've got the Canon Rebel T6.
Nice. There may be, I know there is, in fact, a Canon app for your smartphone that probably has a time-lapse feature built into it. A lot of these cameras, you know, have apps so that you can copy photos over to your smartphone, but they also allow you to control the camera, and the phone can actually become the intervalometer. And you should check that app to see, A, if it does that, and B, if it will combine the images.
I have that app, and it does not.
It does not. Darn it. Dag nabbit. So
and these time lapse apps are like, you know, $60 to buy, and I just can't figure. I just want an easy app.
I know. It seems a little much. In fact, I'm looking at timelapsetool.com, and they have.
I got that one, and I could not figure that.
Couldn't figure it out. Oh man! So what I used for years is QuickTime. Now that was on a Mac, but QuickTime would allow you to open a folder of photos, stills, and then just turn them into a video, because that's all you really need to do is treat each of the stills as a frame in a video. Seems like there should be free apps that do this too. It's crazy to pay for it. How about in the Microsoft Store? I see a free one called Time Lapse. So, and he doesn't charge for that. Oh, no, wait a minute, it says crowdsourcing. This doesn't look good. You take the initial, this isn't what you want. You take the initial photograph and then enlist other people to take additional photographs and make a time lapse. Oh, no. Microsoft does make something called Hyperlapse that might do it. They've offered this for free for years. It takes, actually, I use this as an app. This is a great app for iOS. And apparently they have a Windows version as well now, which I didn't know. And what Hyperlapse does is actually even better, because it lets you take the images and stabilize them. So I did a Hyperlapse on my iPhone some years ago from a London double-decker bus. I was in the top deck. And as we drove through London, and the traffic was horrific, I had it shoot every 30 seconds, shoot a still, and it made the most wonderful time lapse. And the neat thing about Hyperlapse is it stabilizes it, so it gets all the bouncing and bumps out. I think that's the program I'd probably use now that I didn't at the time. It was only available for iPhone, but they've made it available for Windows now. Microsoft Hyperlapse Pro, it's free. And it is easily the best time-lapse program out there, frankly. Comes from Microsoft Labs, so it was part of their, you know, kind of their you know, research project, which is
why. So I should be able to just drag and drop with that with the Hyperlapse?
Yeah, should be. I haven't played with it. I'm going to play with it tonight, though, I can tell you right now. I love doing time-lapses. I did a time-lapse.
A really cool one.
Yeah. On my vacation, I had one of those 360-degree cameras, the Samsung Gear 360, and I did a time-lapse of sunrise at the Incan ruins of Machu Picchu. And but the camera did it all by itself. You know, it has a selection for time-lapse, and it automatically put the photos together and all of that. So this looks like what you want. Hyperlapse is fantastic. And anybody who has an iOS device should put Hyperlapse on it, because it's so much fun to play with.
Yeah, I'll check that out, because I really wanted to get this, the solar eclipse that's coming up. I wanted to get that.
Yeah. And doing it the way you do it is better, because now you have high-quality stills as well as the option to have it moving across the sky. What a good idea. I'd love to see
well,
that.
Well, thanks for your advice.
My pleasure. Yeah, I just launched the Hyperlapse app on my iPhone, and still there, still works. But it's pretty simple. It doesn't seem like there's a lot. You can do a selfie lapse or a hyperlapse. It doesn't seem like there are any controls to it. You just start recording. That's about as simple as you can get. I hope that the Hyperlapse app for Windows will do what he wants to do. We'll kind of put them all together. Boy, I hope so. If you've got some suggestions, let us know. Time lapses can be great. Of course, we've seen them for years. And remember the flower blooming, opening, and then the leaves falling out and the withering. You know, all in a matter of 30 seconds. I love that. That's a time lapse. It's kind of magical because it humans move in one time frame, you know, 1 second per second. So the ability to move, you know, in 50 seconds or 100 seconds per second is kind of magical. I think that's a whole category, frankly, of video and photography. It's one of the reasons people love drone photography so much, because we see our world essentially in two dimensions. We're moving on a flat surface, and it's only three-dimensional to the extent that we stand up and we're looking down, but it's essentially a flat surface. And when you take a drone and you just move up and you look down on it, it's a view people have never had of their house, of their backyard, of a baseball game. And it's wonderful to get that. Maybe it's less special nowadays because we see so much drone footage and time-lapse footage. It's not as magical as it used to be, but that's how you would do it. Scott in Santa Barbara, California. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good. Had a question on desktop scanners. I've got an all-in-one Brother scanner now that works okay, but it's just getting a little bit old.
Yeah.
And, I was just wondering, I know the differences in a lot of desktop scanners will be the speed, which they have the fast photo or whatever the one.
Right. That's really fast. That one is really based on the speed of that is based on two things, a document feeder, and they probably put a faster processor in there so it can process the images fast.
But is there a difference of the actual quality of the scan? I mean, if you get 300 DPI or 600 DPI,
yeah.
is 300 all the way across the board, or is there different types of
scanners? Oh, I see what you're saying. No, there are many, many. In fact, most scanners, you probably on that Brother scanner can go up higher than 300 DPI.
Right, but the
question is, do you want, when you're scanning prints, do you need more than 300 because the prints themselves are not that high resolution?
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I just was want to confirm that, you know, 300 DPI scan is it's kind of the same on every machine.
It is. 300 DPI merely means 300 dots per inch, and that's consistent. Optical quality might vary, though, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. So, just as you could get different cameras on phones, right, and some are better than others, you can have different cameras on scanners, and some are better than others. So 300 DPI is only the prescription for the resolution.
Right.
But it doesn't mean, you know, you can take a 300 DPI image with one phone that looks better than a 300 DPI image from another phone because...
Well, yeah, that's kind of the basis of my question. So given that, do you have I can't spend a whole lot of money, but if I choose to go with a standalone scanner, they kind of range anywhere from, you know, a couple hundred bucks.
You don't need to spend a lot. I think you're scanning prints, right? Not slides or negatives.
Correct. Yeah. Prints. Yeah.
I don't think you have to spend a whole lot of money. Look at the Epson Perfections. Epson's, of course, a sponsor, but I like the Epson Perfection scanners, and you can get an inexpensive one. What would be a good chat room? Do you have a favorite high resolution photo scanner that you like? I'm just looking to see.
Can I? Do you have time to ask one other quick question?
Sure.
I've got a lot of old home videos that I want to put on convert to digital.
Yeah,
and a lot of the converters, they say VHS to DVD.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put them on DVD. I want to put them on my...
Yeah, don't get it. Well, don't get a VHS DVD because that's all in one box. It has a DVD burner and a VHS player. However,
some of them just have a cable, but it's like,
That's not, they're just saying that because, you can take the cable and put it on anything you want.
Yeah,
they're just saying that because that's how most people would understand it. Even a DVD, even an all-in-one unit, you could take the DVD and rip it. It's still digitizing it. But
I don't know if it put it in a separate, in a DVD file format or if it just put it in,
That's an interesting question. No, I think, what kind of cable is it? Is it a USB cable or what kind
I don't have it yet. I'm looking to buy one. There's a company called, I think Dazzle have several different.
Yeah, Dazzle for years made video converters. So they would just take analog video and convert it to bits over USB. That's probably what this is. And they probably only say DVD. Because that's how people would understand it.
I would think that, maybe Windows would have some kind of conversion software built in.
No, it's not a software thing. It's a hardware thing. You need something you need something that converts analog into digital. So the Dazzle comes with software that probably burns a DVD, which is why they call it 2DVD.
Right, okay.
But you're getting a bit. Yeah. The thing is, you don't want to be limited to MPEG-2. DVDs require MPEG-2 video. And that's a lower quality. You can get higher quality video. Of course, you're taking it from VHS, so that may not matter anyway.
Right, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Oh, yeah, I love your show. You've got me quite addicted here on the weekends. I pretty much plan my entire days based on your show, so thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, buddy. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Life in the fast lane. That's me. Oh, Mr. Fastlane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I get excited when I get new insoles on my shoes. That's how fast lane I am. Shannon on the line from Wayne, Nebraska. Hi, Shannon.
Hello, Leo. Happy to be among your blinking lights today.
I have a few.
Heather makes them blink quite brightly, too.
Yes, she does. She shines like a star, doesn't she?
Well, here's my situation. My phone was in the fast lane yesterday. I got spoofed, and I had 103 calls in 1 hour.
OMG. It just kept ringing.
Kept ringing, and then I finally got the.
Was it the same number that kept ringing?
No.
Every time a different number.
Yeah, and the thing was, I didn't know it was spoofing until I could get to my voicemail, and some people were calling me back, yelling at me, and I have a whole new language as of yesterday.
We got to educate people. I got a call the other day. A guy said, "Did you call me?" I said, "No." So what came from? I said, "Did it come from?" And I gave him my number. He said, "Yeah." I said, "That wasn't me. That's a spammer." And this is illegal. We call it neighbor spam. I didn't know there was a name until they arrested a guy who was doing more than, in Florida, is doing more than 1 million calls a day. And it's easy. The phone system is not set up to authenticate phone numbers. So it's easy to spoof caller ID. So now, in order to avoid this kind of heat, usually they rotate through them.
I was wondering because it's slowed down today.
Yeah, you won't get any more. It is illegal, and I guess you could report it. Chances are very good that whoever was doing it was overseas and is not cannot be prosecuted.
Yeah. I have the FCC number to report it. But
I would. Why not? But there's not. It's good for them because they can keep track of it.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be able to catch the person. That's terrible. And obviously, whatever they're doing is really setting people off, right?
One guy said, "You've called me 15 times, and they called me by my name, so I knew they listened to my voicemail. Finally, I changed my voicemail message, which helps. But
you should say on your voicemail, if you've been receiving calls from me, should know that's not me calling you. It's a spammer spoofing my phone number. And the thing is, while this has been going on for months, not everybody's aware of it. And so, when I told the guy, no, that was a spammer, he went, oh, okay, sorry. I think that people are starting to realize it. I get calls all the time from my area code.
Yes.
And they're marketing calls. And that's what this guy got. He's got a massive fine from the FCC. Obviously, if he can do it, anybody can. It's easy to spoof caller ID.
And, of course, if they have your number, they can send texts. So I got texts yesterday to 100 of them. So
that's a real problem because you pay, many people pay for texts. So if you're getting texts, did he hang up? Did I lose it? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let me see what happened here. Must have pressed a button. Can I get you back? Now I got somebody else. So thank you, Shannon. I appreciate the call. And I'm sorry that happened. And obviously you understand what happened because, you know, it's pretty clear once you listen to a few of those voicemails that somebody was using your phone number. Remember, we've got calls like this for years from, and I still do from time to time, from people say, spammers are using my email address. I know because I'm getting all these bounce backs, you know, and it's the same answer, which is, well, not much you can do about that. And just know that usually, first of all, it happens. Well, it used to happen to everyone. And they usually move on. They don't want to, you know, they change return addresses frequently. I think you got a, you got somebody doing this whose system was messed up. Because there's no, if you're selling timeshares, there's no percentage, which is what this guy in Florida was doing. There's no percentage in you harassing people. You don't want to do that. What you're trying to do is convince them to pick up the phone. Nowadays on cell phones and even home phones, people don't pick up anymore. I don't. Do you? If you see an unfamiliar number, we don't pick up. If I see an 800 number. In fact, now most of the cell phone companies will warn you. We think this is a scam call. Well, why didn't you block it then? It's a spam. You know it's spam. But so what spammers have started to do is to spoof the area code, and at least in some cases spoof the area code in the exchange. You know, the so 707123, those three numbers there. So it looks like not only is it from your area, but it's from a neighbor. It's from very nearby. And I will answer those generally, or at least I used to, because, well, is it the school? Is it somebody I know? Did somebody find my dog? I mean, you know, you if it's a local call, you don't assume it's a spammer, except that it is nowadays more and more. That is illegal. That's why the FCC is fining this Miami guy millions of dollars. But I don't think there's anything you can do about it. Somebody's willing to break the law there. They're not paying any attention to the do not call registry or laws against things. They don't care. It's this is just out of control. The FCC knows it, but I don't know if there's a whole lot they can do about it. Chris is on the line from Burbank, California. You're next. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
This is out of control.
Oh, turn off your radio, Chris. Oh, and hang up. That would also work. I must have surprised him. How about Craig in Carlsbad? Hi, Craig.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Of course, thanks for calling.
So I got a question. It's regarding gallery, you know, photographs in the gallery. I have a Droid, and as an example, when I go to the gallery, I see all my photos and then put them in albums.
Yeah.
I go to the albums, like you can see the photos in there, and the initial screen that shows the photos, those photos disappear. My question to you is, regarding Google Photos, can I make it behave the same way?
Yes.
In other words, Google Photos has all the photos. You know, I might have 200 photos in there, and I put them into albums, and I understand when I hit the albums tab, I can see where I organize them.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily want to see them on that first screen, because it's sort of confusing. I see 100 or so photos there. I'm wondering.
I see. You don't.
You not see them.
Yeah, you just want to see a list of albums instead of photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Because I want to see, like, out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, I want to, as if, you know, once they're organized, I don't want to see them anymore in the mixed format.
So with Google Photos, there's a tab that says albums. Let me close Google Photos and then reopen it. I've set the tab to albums, but let me. It would be nice if it remembered that. I bet it doesn't. Nope, went right back to photos.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you could just hit albums real quickly and not look. But it does show the photos. It's really one of the bad things about Android is that Google makes Android. And Google makes a set of apps like Google Photos for Android. And then every single phone manufacturer, yours is Motorola, but Samsung, LG, everybody else, also makes a gallery app. So now your phone will have two gallery apps and with differing behavior. I prefer Google Photos just because of the backup. For the backup alone means I don't have to ever worry about losing any pictures ever again. Whether I, you know, as long as they're, as soon as I can get them to the phone, even for my big camera, I can move them to the phone and then get them backed up. And that's really nice. But yeah, I don't know. Start with albums. How can we do that? Let's see if we can figure it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll do some research. Maybe in the settings. Be nice if there was some way to say, hey, just open this in the albums. But of course there isn't. So you do you move everything to the albums right away? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I try to. And I really like how I on my phone in the regular
in the gallery app?
Or the gallery, yeah. Like, yeah. If I, as an example, if I have 20 photographs in there and I only move, let's say, 10 of them into an album, the next time I go to look at my photographs, it'll just show those 10 remaining, you know?
Yeah.
That's where I left off.
Yeah, but, so that's easy because then you know where you are. Yeah.
Exactly. You know where you left off. But with this Google Photos, you go to that main screen with 100 photos in there and you're thinking, gosh, did I do this? Oh, well, let me check. And then you got to go check your album back and forth.
It's right. Just,
kind of sort of,
you know,
frustrating because
I hate to say it, but Apple's Photos does remember where you left off and will start up in albums. That's frustrating.
Yeah, that's nice.
But Google's does not. And I don't see a setting where you can make it do that. Like I said, don't look. Quick switch over to albums.
Yeah, I'm surprised other people have not complained or asked about this or anything because, yeah, I mean, you don't even know where you left off. You have 100 photos and you're wondering, did I put that in the album already? Then you got to go check the album. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting question.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. So. I think this is, I'm just looking and I'm looking in the settings and all of that. And it just doesn't look like that'd be a simple thing for them to add a setting that says where to start. Start in albums. That's all you want, right? Just start up in albums.
And also, when you go back to that main screen with all of your photographs,
oh,
it'd be nice if only the ones
that haven't been moved.
Exactly. You know how you're organizing things, and you say,
yeah.
"Oh, well, I have these."
Google will not. I can tell you right now, Google will not do that because while they do obviously allow and support albums, they also expect people not to do too much organizing. They're trying to make a product that you don't need to organize because they have such powerful search. That you could say, I just want to see my Pismo Beach pictures, and that's all you'd get.
I gotcha.
So they want there to be this page where it's a giant pool that you just then search within.
Yeah, I understand that too. So
you might try. Okay. There are other album programs, Amazon and Microsoft OneDrive, Amazon Photos. You might try some of these other ones because all of them have that nice feature where they'll say, oh, you know, let me just take every picture you take and put it in our app.
Mm-hmm.
So I would try. I don't have Amazon Photos on here, and I'll download it and try it. But
Google Photos is by far. It's great all around.
It's the best tool. I do too. Yeah, thing. Yeah. It's the best
it's
tool.
That one item.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it. And,
my pleasure.
Real quick, you're talking about the Echoes. I have the Dot, and I find that it's. Compared to, say, if I ask my phone, you know, ask Google something, the depth of or the well of knowledge that it has compared to asking Alexa something, it's not even comparable. I don't know.
No, that's exactly right. And that's because Google has this big head start in artificial intelligence. And so they've made their thing be kind of a general purpose Q&A thing, whereas the Echo is a very specific for. But there's things I can't do on Google that I can do on the Echo, like read my Audible books because Amazon owns Audible and listen to, you know. So there's
true.
So I have both. But I think what's rapidly happening is Echo is getting a big lead because of things like these new form factors. You're right, though. The Google Assistant. Do you have a Google Home as well?
No, but I was going to get one.
Yeah, because that's the Google Assistant.
Yeah, it's nice because you can. It has such a vast knowledge of things, and you know, Alexa, you ask it for the weather or who is some famous person.
It doesn't know a lot of things.
If you get a little tricky, then it says, "I don't know." So
that's the difference between having Amazon behind you and Google behind. Amazon Echo's great at shopping, though, right?
yes.
Talk to you later. Thank you for the call. He's been everywhere, man. Move over a little bit, Johnny Jet. Move over. You're on the left-hand side of the screen. I'm going to move you over because on the radio, you got to be in the middle. That's the way radio works. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And here he is, Johnny Jet. He is our travel guru, joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. He's home, I can tell, because he has a map of the world behind him.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
How you doing?
You see, you moved over, but your microphone didn't.
I'll bring my microphone. Here we go.
The mic is more important than the camera because this is radio.
I gotcha. So I won't even look at the camera.
No, there's no camera. What camera? Hi, Johnny.
How you doing?
I am very well, and I bet you're glad to be home, or maybe not.
Of course, I'm very happy to be home.
Everybody
I was
says
in Seattle.
Yeah, you were all over the place.
I am going away again this week, so
everybody says one of the benefits of travel is how you appreciate your home when you get home.
Without a doubt,
is that true for you too?
Oh, everyone tells me, where would you go if you go anywhere in the world? And I'm usually like home because home is vacation for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, welcome home.
Thank you.
And I bet you your 9-month-old Jack is glad to be home. Does he know he's home? Can he tell?
Yeah, I think so. He starts kicking and moving his arms when we start walking up the stairs. So,
oh,
yeah,
that's cute. He knows. We're home, Daddy. Know. I'm home.
And he's been a good traveler so far. So knock on wood, he's got another good-sized flight coming up. So
good for him.
Here we go.
Johnny joins us each week to help us travel better with technology, usually with an app. And a website? What do you want to start with today?
So I got a website called Travel Car. So this is a website for anyone who wants to get a free rent-a-car. Free airport parking.
Oh.
And 70% off their rent-a-cars at the airport.
Who doesn't want to get free airport parking?
We talked about a similar website a few years ago.
Yeah.
It was in San Francisco, but I believe that company went belly up. So now here's a new one. This is a French company that's been around since 2012. They're in, I think, 30 different countries, but they just launched LAX and San Francisco, and they're about to launch Las Vegas.
So you drive to their parking lot where they don't charge you for parking because you're going to rent a car from them.
No, you're going to rent. They're going to rent your car.
They rent your car?
Yes.
What? Oh. And so, okay, so you drive here. Do they shuttle you to the airport?
So you drive to the airport. I think they pick you up, or they'll shuttle you back to the. I'm not exactly sure on that.
I'm not doing this with my Tesla. Nobody driving my Tesla.
No, there's no way you're going to do that with your Tesla.
Yeah.
But if you have a secondhand car that you don't really care about and don't use, but
they do
give you $1 million in liability insurance.
Sure.
And so they're covered against theft and physical damage and things like that. But for people who travel a lot, and they're not guaranteed they're going to rent your car. A lot of times it's just going to sit there, and they still give you free airport parking.
But if they rent it, do they give you money?
They give you money, too. So you get money every mile the car is driven.
And then if you need a rental car, you arrive at the airport, you go to this place, Travel Car, and they will rent you a car cheap because it's somebody's beat-up Toyota.
Exactly. They say it's up to 70% off of the regular car rental rates.
Have you rented a car from them? Is it a nice experience, or is it kind of beat up, or what? I mean,
I have not. They just launched last week in the U.S., but I would not give my car up, but I would try someone else's for sure. I mean, that would not be a problem. I mean,
what if they're a heavy smoker and the car smells like a chimney?
Well, I would assume they're not going to take that.
Yeah.
At least I would hope not.
Yeah. They're French. They might.
Well, that's
true.
Oh,
it's good. It smells like I was. I love it.
Although I think in France you can't smoke now in public. You can't smoke in public places.
No, I think it's changing everywhere, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, which is great.
Travel, because it's interesting. Travelcar.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for the U.S. version, I think it's us.travelcar.com.
Okay. Yeah, I did.
It's also an app.
Yeah.
It's a free app both on Android and iOS,
nice.
Too. So, and speaking of apps, last month Waze introduced Carpool. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, my Waze will do it. Not that I want to, but I could Carpool if I wanted to.
But it's a great idea. And I was actually hoping that maybe the chat room can help me because one of my readers sent me an email saying, how can I get from Big Bear Mountain right outside of LA, an hour and a half, to LAX for cheap? And I tried looking up on like Rome to Rio, and they said there's a shuttle, but the shuttle only goes once a week. So I was going to suggest Waze, but
yes,
I was wondering.
But somebody has to be driving there, right? So that's the key. I would imagine this works best, you know, along major commute arteries, right?
Right, but people definitely have to be commuting that route. I know people who do.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, but I just don't know for the general public if you would recommend Waze. I have not used the carpool part, but what I like about the carpool version is that it's not like Uber or Lyft carpool where you're getting paid or you're paying someone. This is just, it's a free ride. You're just chipping in for gas.
Right. Right.
Which I like
about. This is good for the earth because it takes cars off the road.
Exactly.
That's
what I really like about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you have to do this from your Waze app and just, you know, all you can do is fire it up and see.
Yes. So.
What else? Another
one is for, it's called Bands in Town. It's an app. Have you heard of this one?
Let me guess. Is it tell me what bands are in town?
Exactly. So if you're traveling to a place and you want to see your favorite band, and how many, I've happened many times to my friends where, you know, they call me up like, oh my God, how can I get tickets? I just arrived and U2's playing or whoever. So this, you can sign up. It's actually top rated. I mean, it's 5 stars in both Android and iOS and thousands of ratings. So Bands in Town, you can just sign up to get alerts.
I suppose you could use it even when you're in town. I mean, it doesn't have to, you don't have to be traveling to use this.
Oh, no, for sure. This is actually, they're actually based on for it's really for your own hometown.
Oh, okay.
But I like it for travelers because you can put in that city that you're going to and see if, you know, there's a band that you like. And they also sync your, they'll learn your type of music by syncing all your iTunes, Spotify and SoundCloud and all that stuff. And even your Facebook likes and Twitter and see who you like.
Chris Isaac is in town. I'm going to go.
And they'll suggest. And obviously they make money by you booking through them, but you don't have to book through them. But it's just a great way to find out who's in town.
Bandsintown.com. Bandsintown.com. Wow. Nice. Well, sir, you are a regular fount of travel knowledge. And if you go to johnnyjet.com, you can read all about it because that's where he puts all of his fine articles. He also has a great travel newsletter, which is free. It has deals. There's a deals newsletter, and there's also there's other newsletters too, right? I mean,
daily travel tip. So that's
I do all I your travel tips. Believe me,
I have a weekly newsletter too.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, please
what
sign
is your,
up.
You know, what is your I'm looking for luggage. I'm looking for a good carry-on bag. And I keep trying them all. I keep buying ones on Kickstarter and stuff.
Right.
Do you have one you really like?
I've been using the same one, and we talked about it before, Briggs & Riley. I thought you used Briggs & Riley
as well. I do, but it's a two-wheeler. Do they make a four-wheeler now?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, they have all different types.
Lisa and I really like our Briggs & Riley. It's got, you know, a handle, but it's only got two wheels. And that's how it used to be, kids, in the old days. Now they've got these spinners. They have four wheels, and you can go in any direction. It makes it a lot easier to move the thing around. So, maybe I should update my Briggs & Riley to get a four-wheeler.
I mean, it's really personal, so I suggest people either going to a big department store or going to a luggage store, if you can even find one these days, and just trying them out and see.
You know
who
has luggage? Lisa went to Kohl's. She needed something quick for our trip, and they have a ton of luggage.
TJ Maxx, too. They're cheap.
And it's cheap. And, you know, I realized I've been buying expensive luggage. It doesn't matter because it gets so beat up so fast. You should buy cheap luggage.
Well, I disagree on that because.
Oh, really? All right.
Because I beat up my bags.
Not for carry-on. I mean for checked luggage. Carry-on, you could take care of it. But the guys in the carry-on, I don't, the check, they go, johnnyjet.com, ladies and gentlemen, Leo LaVoy, the tech guy. Seriously, every bag, I don't care what kind of bag. I have a Briggs & Riley, beautiful, big Briggs & Riley bag I bought 1 year ago for a trip, and by now it's just gray and grim and torn and nasty and ratty.
Really? Well, you can send it back. They have a great guarantee.
No, I check it, though. That's the problem. I guess they could clean it.
Yeah, but...
Do they clean it?
No, I don't know if they'd clean it. If it's just that it looks ratty, that's
it
a problem.
It looks ratty.
So one way around that, there's a thing called... I think it's Rhino Wrap.
Yeah, I've seen those at the airports that put plastic bags.
But there's actually one that you can carry in your bag, and you can do it yourself.
Oh, that's
self-serve.
A good idea. Self-serve Rhino Wrap. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think it's called Rhino Wrap. I have to double check. They sent me one of these, and I haven't used it, but It's in my pile of things over there. I'll have to check it out.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. I need to get some Rhino wrap.
That's one way to, you know, prevent your bags from getting scuffed. Also, it's one more way of, you know, trying to keep the airport baggage thefts out of your bags, because at least you'll know that if they went in there.
This is funny. And you put your name and number on it. It looks like a shopping bag. That you.
So it is Rhino wrap.
Yeah, Rhino wrap. Yeah.
Okay, good.
But wait a minute. What it? I'm confused. Does it come? Oh, look at this. This is hysterical. TSA compliant Rhino wrap.
Yeah.
You can. Oh, these are.
I should have mentioned it on the radio show.
Well, save it for next week. You can talk about.
All right.
It. This is in the podcast. We'll do Rhino.
I'll put it in my notes.
Look at that. So I don't understand how this would work. Do you? You have to.
You wrap it. You just.
Oh, it's like it looks like a lint.
It's like tape. Yeah, exactly. That's what it looks like. A lint roller. You just wrap it. Yeah.
And how? So it's $20 for. Oh, it does 4 bags. Okay, that's not bad.
I mean, the airport, they charge at least $10.
Yeah.
I don't see it too much in the U.S. airports, but in Europe, it's really popular. And Asia.
But the TSA is just going to slit it open to get into my bag.
Oh, yeah. If there's something, if it goes through the screening and they see something, they're definitely going to rip it open. But, you know, how many, usually they don't go in your bags unless you have something suspicious.
Seems like
so this is really just to prevent it from getting scuffed, and also from the airport. You know, the baggage handlers who sometimes steal. That's why you never put anything valuable in your bag.
No, I don't. And that's why I need a good carry-on, because I carry my cameras and stuff. Right. I just did a Kickstarter, or maybe it was an Indiegogo, for a bag, carry-on bag. It's probably – I get burned by Kickstarter every time. I do. I
stopped
sucker.
Recommending Kickstarters because of you. Because I used to talk about
such
some of them.
A sucker. Well, and a lot of times they don't deliver, right? What did I buy? Samsara, the world's. Let's see here. I'm such a sucker. It's the world's first aluminum smart suitcase.
And you got suckered.
It's got a. I don't know. I ordered it. I'll find out. It's not going to come till November. So a couple things I liked about it: the wheels. This four wheel, but they're like, they don't take up a lot of space on the bottom. They're like embedded. So I don't know. They say there's more luggage because the wheels are in the luggage. Plus it's got a battery. Who cares? My Away luggage has a battery in it. That's not a big deal.
Natalie has Away. She loves her Away.
I like
Away,
my Away. I use my Away right now. See how the wheels are in the bag? That says that gives you an additional 4 liters of. The thing I like about this is aluminum. Aluminium, right. But we'll see. I don't know.
I also carry a tote bag. So, you know, I've been carrying a Roots, but also just got a new Cleveland XL duffel. They're not cheap.
But
so
it has
just
wheels
carry
on,
it on,
right?
No. There's no wheels. It's a duffel bag. I strap a lug buddy to my
We need to do a whole show on this. Yeah. A lug buddy. All right, I'm going to run. Thank you, Johnny. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Chris is on the line from Burbank. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Mr. Laporte. First time caller. I'm very impressed. I feel like I'm in Star Trek.
Welcome to the future.
totally blown away. First time watcher on my computer, too. I'll be watching every week now.
Thank you.
I have one question. I have some questions for you. I'm hoping that you can help me.
All right.
I listen to you on Saturdays when I work, but I've never gone this far yet. I have a Motorola DVR. And I have a lot of travel picture shows called Islands and some other stuff on there.
Yeah.
And places I'll never go. And I'd like to keep them, but I'm going to be changing companies. And I wanted to know, it's a Motorola DVR cable box.
Yeah.
Wondering if I could.
No, this is because the TV companies. You know, the people who make that show and HBO and everybody, they're afraid you're going to steal their stuff. And if you were able to...
Oh, no, I was just wondering if there was a way I could record off of it.
I know what you're saying. And the reason they don't do that, they prevent that is because they're afraid you're going to steal their stuff. You're going to burn a DVD of those great travel shows and sell them on a blanket on your lawn. Obviously, you're not. Oh. I know. But they're afraid of that. And so, and the problem is a DVR makes a perfect digital copy of whatever you're recording, right? It's coming in digitally and it's recorded digitally on the hard drive. And it makes sense. It's there. It's on the hard drive. If it were on a hard drive on a computer, you could copy it. And it is really, it's a computer and a hard drive. But here's the thing. They encrypt it. And so when if you could pull it off, you would just get gobbledygook. So there is... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I had an old... what is it called? It's a DVR recorder. And I haven't used it in years because I've been using it hooked on the cable box because I got a new one from the company that has all these hours on it.
Yeah, and let me explain what that does. And that was what I was about to tell you. They call it the analog hole. They can't prevent you from playing back video from a DVR because that's how you watch it, right? So the trick is, and this is how the DVD recorder works, it hooks up. Doesn't hook up via USB or digital, which would make a perfect copy. It hooks up via the analog output on the DVR and records it. It's basically another you're playing it back on your DVR and recording it on another DVR, another recorder. That you can do. And that's the only way to do it. There's a couple of disadvantages to it, which is why they let you do it. One, it's going to reduce the quality a little bit because you're recording a second time. That's probably not a big deal. The other is you have to sit there because you're doing it in real time. There's no fast way to do it. So for every hour of video on your DVR, it's going to take you an hour to record it.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll tell you, I have it already hooked up in the living room, and I couldn't find my manual because I bought this thing about 4 years ago. So I went online, and I found the manual, and I was messing with it. And what I did is I just hooked up the HDMI from the back of the DVR recorder to my TV, and then I just go to my recorded shows, and I've recorded it. But it's really not a good representation. It's not a good recording of these places like I would like, because they're, when you watch them on the regular TV. Now, as far as recording the time, it doesn't matter. I have four TVs, so I just go into the living room, hook all that up, and I could just play it hour by hour and watch something else on another TV.
How is is it a camera? You point at the TV? How are you recording it from the TV?
Well, I just go to my recordings.
So that DVD recorder, is that what you're using? This new recorder or this old recorder thing you had? It's hooked up.
Yeah, it's not that old. It's 2015.
How is it recording? What is it hooked to?
Well, it's all hooked to my. It's just hooked to my. I just put it in one of my HDMIs in the back of my big screen in the living room, and then I hooked up the other end of the cable to. The back of the DVR recorder, and then I look on it.
Oh yeah,
I got it so where it's 1080p because I'm trying to find all this stuff. I never really liked it. I used to have a Bright on about 10 years ago, and it worked perfectly, but it died.
So it's exactly as I said. You're using the analog. This is why the quality is not so great. You're using what's called the analog hole, and it's a hole because it's a hole in copy protection, and it's very difficult for them to plug up. They try. They do all sorts of weird copy protection schemes. They're not very effective. You've obviously bypassed it, but this is why they don't mind. Exactly as I said, the quality's low, and it's in real time. There's no better way to do it, except maybe a better recorder. You didn't tell me what your recorder is hooked up to, but I would guess it's hooked up to the your DVR might have several different outputs. The highest quality is digital, HDMI. That won't work. Because there is copy protection on that. It won't play if you hook it up to something via HDMI. It'll say, no, you're a pirate, stop. You say HDCP will protect that. But you can hook up the analog outputs. And there are two kinds of analog outputs. There's composite and there's component. The composite is red and white. Sometimes red, white, sometimes there's red and white and yellow. Actually, the yellow is the video, so there's three. There's red, white, and yellow. That's the lowest possible quality. If that's what you're hooking up to, it is possible you can improve the quality by using the component, which is also three cables, and it doesn't include audio. So that's kind of a problem. But component will at least get a high-def signal out of there. So if you have RCA connectors, you know, with the red, white, and yellow, that's composite. If you have the, I can't remember, you know, it's CMYK, right? So it's cyan, magenta, and yellow, I think. I can't remember what color these component cables are. If you have that kind, you can connect them. There are less licit ways to do this. There are HDMI splitters. They can't be billed this way. They'd be illegal, but they are sold on Amazon. We have some. We didn't know that when we bought them, they were just, you know, HDMI splitters or converters. We found out, oh, look, it strips out the copy protection, because it is possible to do that. It's just illegal to sell it in the country. So if you find something on Amazon that lets you connect those two devices via high-def HDMI, you'll get a better quality. The reason this is allowed is because it's low quality, and they can't really stop it very well. We will take a little break for news at the top of the hour. Then we will talk to Kathy in Tustin and Paul in L.A. and Vin in Corona and on and on and on. More of your calls still to come. 8888 Ask Leo, another hour of the show. And don't forget the website, because that's where all the answers end up. Links and all you need, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And our website, techguylabs.com. Kathy, thanks for hanging on. Kathy in Tustin, California, you're next.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
What can I do for you?
I would like to purchase a new computer, but I still want the CD player and the DVD player.
You want what we call an optical disc. And I am sure, although I don't buy them, and most people don't buy them, but I'm sure somebody must sell a PC with an optical disc. Have you looked around?
Well, I did find one, I think, at Costco.
Yeah, I would stay away from the big box stores for computers. They often have good deals, but that's because they're older computers.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm going to guess Dell, which is one of the PC companies I'd recommend, must sell a version with an optical disc. I think what most people do is what I do, because I don't want to carry around an optical disc all the time with me. I just need it sometimes, is I buy an external optical disc that connects to the USB port. And then when I need it, I've got it. See, what's happening is increasingly people don't need them. Software doesn't come on DVD or CD anymore. Even people who want to watch movies will typically just copy them to the hard drive and play them off the hard drive. That seems to work better. So I feel like that's why you're not seeing a lot of them. Why do you want one?
Well, because I have a lot of DVDs and CDs that I would like to download to the computer.
Ah, that's a good reason. So you might use them when you first get the computer, and then you wouldn't need it anymore, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So then I think that's one argument for an external CD DVD. They're about $27. They're not expensive, and then you're not stuck with carrying it around for the rest of the lifetime of that computer. Because you won't need it because you've put everything on the hard drive, right?
Okay.
So Dell still sells them. I'm told the Inspiron line at Dell still will come. And those are nice computers. The thing is, you'll notice immediately is they're the bigger, thicker, heavier computers with less battery life because they have to power an optical drive. So that's the drawback, and that's why the market has moved to thinner, lighter. But Dell would do it. They're one of the companies I like. Acer and Asus are two Taiwanese companies. Both make excellent PC laptops. Microsoft does not make one with an optical disc. So now what somebody's telling me, and I think this is a good point, is that the good deal about Costco is you get a great warranty and a great return policy. So what I would do if you do see one in Costco that you like is check before you buy it online to see when it came out. How, you know, how is it? Is it an older discontinued model or still an available model? I guess you're right, because the return policy is so good. That might be a reason to continue to use Costco.
Okay. Now I know there's this Amazon Prime Day coming up.
Yes. They may well offer a DVD equipped PC. You want a laptop, I presume, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not hard to get one in a desktop, but people want thinner and lighter on the laptops. So, I would say keep your eye peeled. The Amazon Prime Day starts in tomorrow night, and it'll go through Monday. I would look. The problem with the Prime Day is, you know, you just don't know what they're going to have, and that's, you kind of have to keep an eye on it the whole time.
Does it start at midnight tomorrow?
I can't remember exactly. I think so. Or it starts, I believe, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
I believe so. Let me just check. But, it's funny because I've never really taken part. This is their third annual Prime Day. But people go crazy because they say the deals are so good. Starts July 10th at 6 p.m. Pacific. So that's day after tomorrow. I apologize. Day after tomorrow.
Oh, so Monday night.
Monday. Yeah, I apologize. Monday night.
That's okay.
Yep.
That's okay.
Yep.
Monday
night. 6 okay. p.m. Monday night. Check it out.
Okay. And then how much,
Well, you're probably talking between $500 and $1,000.
Okay, but how much storage space should I get?
Oh, well, that also depends on how much you want to put on there. Since you sounds like you want to put music on there, maybe even movies.
Right.
I think you want to get a pretty big hard drive, probably at least a terabyte. You know, 512 gigs would be the next step down. But I think for you, a terabyte. Now, the problem is when you get to these big drives, they tend to be slower spinning drives. And that means the computer is going to be a little bit slower, and because they're spinning, a little less reliable. Solid-state drives, I think, tend to be more reliable in laptops because there's no moving parts. But the problem with solid-state, the flash drives, they're very fast, they're very reliable, but they're very expensive per gigabyte. So you tend to get smaller drives. 128 would be too little for you. 256 would be the absolute minimum. 512 gigs might be enough. You just have to kind of keep an eye on it. And, you know, if you have music on there you don't need, or movies, mostly movies on there. Movies tend to be the biggest. If you take a movie from a DVD and put it on your hard drive, that's about a gigabyte, maybe two. So keep that in mind. And that's why you might need more storage. Terabyte's a lot for a laptop. They tend to be less. And generally, you'll be getting the slower, less reliable non-solid state, the spinning drives.
So it has to be a spinning drive?
No, but the price will go up quite a bit if you get a solid. You can get it. My latest laptop has a terabyte solid state drive, but it was expensive as a result. I think SSDs are so much faster and so much more reliable.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start.
I don't know if I've helped you. I've given you things to think about. what else do you do with your laptop?
Not a lot.
So you don't need a lot of speed. Is it mostly really, watching movies and listening to music?
Well, I have an Apple computer. And I have iPad.
Yeah. Apple has stopped putting optical discs in their computers. They stopped doing that a few years ago.
Right. But I managed to get, I think, the last one.
Congratulations.
It was so, like, okay,
so you're going to be getting
if you, anymore, and I'm like, okay, well, I want it. So.
I should have mentioned that. Yeah, if you're getting one with an optical drive, you're getting a Windows machine. Do you mind going to Windows?
No, not at all.
You can get another Mac and get, as I said, an external drive. Apple calls them super drives.
No, I don't want to get another Mac.
Oh, you really want a Windows machine?
Well, yeah, because I have an Android phone. I've got the Note 4, and I want to be able to download my stuff.
Oh, you still can do that on a Mac. I use Android. I use everything. I use Windows and Macs, Androids and iOS. They're all interoperable. There's nothing that... on the Apple doesn't require you to use an iPhone, thank goodness. It all works better if you use an iPhone. The thing is, you will save money in the Windows. I would, you know, they've convinced me in the chat room you should go to Costco and see if what they've got is what you need. It sounds like they might, and their warranty is very good. And their return policy is the best in the business. And there's something to be said for that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Chat room's going back and forth over these Amazon Prime Days, and the consensus seems to be the deals are not that great. And the product selection, of course, is very limited. It's just stuff they offer for deals. A lot of people are saying, I don't know about this Prime Days thing. It's a big deal for Amazon, obviously. I think they generate quite a bit of revenue. I don't know. You know what? It drives people to Amazon. That's why they do it. And then maybe you'll buy that thing they're advertising for less, or maybe you'll just keep browsing and buy something else. Prime Day is the big one. Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones. And on the line from Corona, California, Vin. Hi, Vin.
Oh, hi, Leo.
Thanks. Welcome
to my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I've got a question. I'm looking for a home theater soundbar that give me kind of 5.1 sound without the wire.
Right.
And I've been doing some research, and I know the Bose SoundTouch 300, the Sony, and the Samsung. I just wonder which is the better, you know, quality and in terms.
One of the nice things about the Bose, although it's very it's ridiculously expensive, is it has a wireless subwoofer. So a sound bar is really a bar that, and the design of it is so that it will either be below your TV screen or above your TV screen, unobtrusive. There, of course, is a wire from your TV to the sound bar, but that's it. You don't have to, like, I have a 5.1 surround system. That means I've got 6 speakers. Each of them has a pair of wires, and I'd have somebody go under the house to run the wires into the walls because I didn't want to see them going across the floor, right? You can trip on them. Yeah, I don't blame you. There is a limitation, though. With a sound bar, this bar that's underneath the TV, it can have many speakers in it. But a couple of things. First of all, because of its size, there's a direct correlation between the size of a speaker cone and how much air it can move, which means there's a direct correlation between the bass capability of the speaker and its size. Bigger is better. That's why if you can have a separate subwoofer, you're going to get much better bass sounds. I don't know if that's important to you. The other issue, of course, is you have to simulate surround because that speaker isn't behind you or even kind of to the left and the right, but right in front of you where the TV is. And they do a pretty good job with electronics, computer-generated sound field generation. They can actually trick you into thinking there's left, there's right, there's even behind you. But they'll never do as good a job as actual surround speakers. So you just have to understand it's a compromise. It's a compromise a lot of people are willing to make because you get great, you know, it takes up less room. So,
I know this, the Sony has, Bose also have 2 rear satellite that you can buy extra.
Yeah. But how much is the price? It's like $2,500.
Well, it come up to be close to that. Right?
Yeah.
You would add everything.
So we have one at home because my wife loves Bose. And I tried to talk her out of it, but she really wanted it. So, hey, happy wife, happy life. Yeah. I bought it for her. Right? It has another advantage. It has and she still misses it. She loves it. It has a central box and a universal remote, so you control everything with it. I just think it's way overpriced for what you get. What they're aiming at is a kind of a luxury crowd that's willing to pay a lot for the convenience of it. And I have to admit, it's convenient. The sound is good because you can get surround. It's all wireless, and they do a very good. I think they do a very good job. So, I have to say, I if you're willing to, if this price doesn't completely turn you off, I don't know how good a value it is, but it definitely works. It's definitely nice. And as I said, my wife still says, "Why don't we still have that Bose?" She loves that. Now, Paul, I'm sorry, Scott Wilkinson. Go ahead.
I was just concerned. Like, I heard the Bose has a problem with linking with the Samsung TV, which what I have, you know, with regard to the ARC, the channel return. So I was wondering, is there an alternative, you know, like in terms of like Samsung?
Yeah, they're less expensive. I haven't had any problem with the Bose in a Samsung TV. That's what we're using it on.
Oh, okay.
There may be people having issues with it. ARC, the audio return channel, is what drives it. It's the way the Bose works, it's designed to replace an AV receiver. It becomes an AV receiver. It becomes your central, at least the one we have, and I imagine this is the same since the price is similar. It becomes your central, all the video goes into it from all the different devices, and then one comes out into the TV. So now we don't use ARC. The only reason you'd need ARC is if you were using the smart TV features of the Samsung, because then the Samsung's generating the sound, which somehow has to get back into the Bose. That's what ARC is for. But if you're using, you know, a cable box, not important. If you're using a DVD player, a Blu-ray player, a game box, all of those work just fine. I don't know if you're using the smart TV features how those would work. They should work fine. Now, I will tell you, Scott Wilkinson is very fond of the Vizio soundbars. They're a lot less expensive. And Vizio does make the SmartCast. Wirecutter even loves this. It's $250, and it comes with a subwoofer. The Yamaha, he really likes the Yamaha because the Yamaha was designed by a great sound designer and is really a he says very good sounding. So those are a couple that our home theater guru suggests.
Do you know what Yamaha model he's talking about?
Yeah, he said he really liked the YAS 106.
106, okay.
Yep. And that's an all-in-one. That has built-in subs. And Scott says he really likes that. And that's $200. So you can, I mean, that's one-tenth the cost of the Bose. It's probably not as great sounding, sure.
Quick question. The Sonos Bower doesn't have the audio return channel, but it just have an optical. Does that make a big difference in terms of getting surround sound?
Yeah, you want optical. The audio return channel is HDMI, and again, it's only sound generated on the TV. Optical is similar. It's the same thing, but it's a better way of connecting. We use the optical. I have a number of soundbars. I also have the Sonos soundbar, also overpriced in my opinion, but convenient. And it's connected to the TV via an optical cable. The reason you don't do that with the Bose as much is because the Bose really is more like an AV receiver. The Sonos is really a standalone device. There's no other box. It's all going through the Sonos soundbar. The nice thing about the Sonos, it's all wireless too, and you can later add surrounds and a subwoofer as you want to add more to it. I'm not sure what the Sonos soundbar costs. It's a little more than the Vizio's, maybe $300 or $400. It has the advantage, though, of supporting internet audio, so you can listen to Spotify or Google Music or Amazon Music on it. You can listen to a lot of different stuff. You can listen to this show on it, and you can control it via your smartphone or tablet. So Sonos might be another interesting choice. I think it's a very good sound quality. And it's expandable wirelessly over time. And that lets you kind of spread the purchase out. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. I'd love to hear from anybody who's got a good recommendation. We'll put a link in our show notes to the various soundbar recommendations from Scott Wilkinson. He's made several over the years. He also likes Sony. Let's see. Which one did he like? Well, I'll tell you what. Go to the website, techilabs.com. It'll all be there. He's talked about soundbars quite a bit on this show, actually. More of your calls still to come. Stay right here. Last couple of calls are a good example of the challenge of doing this show. I'm not complaining. I love the challenge of doing this show. But the reason is there's no blanket recommendation because it always depends on, well, what are your expectations? What are your needs? What are your use cases? So somebody wants to buy a laptop with a DVD player or somebody wants to buy a soundbar. what I try to do is explain kind of the issues that might come up, the things you need to think about. But really, you know, it depends on how much money you want to spend, how good your ears are, how what's your expectation for sound quality, and that everybody's different. So I'll just I say this so that you understand when I make. When you call, I know a lot of people just say, just tell me the one thing I should do. And I guess I could, but one size does not fit all in a lot of these things. So what I try to do, what I think is most useful, is to give you at least some of the outline of the problem and the solution so you understand where to look, depending on your needs, your price sensitivity, things like that. I mean, I can always tell you the most expensive, best-sounding solution, but that may not be the best one for you. Paul, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hey, I'm looking forward to purchasing a laptop that meets component requirements that a university called Cal State Chico expects to meet.
Ah, you're going to be studying what?
Mechanical engineering.
Ah, and they have some fairly strict requirements there?
Okay, I can go in detail if you want.
No, you don't need to. So you wrote to them, or they sent you an email saying, "Hey, if you're going to get a laptop for, are you just going to school now? This is new."
It's posted publicly on the website.
Okay, and you're going to be a freshman this year?
Yes.
How exciting! First, let me say congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
That's great. So, so they give you kind of minimal requirements because they know, especially for mechanical engineering, what software you're going to need to run. Do they say, for instance, Mac or PC, or does it matter?
Either one. But me personally, I'm going to get a PC.
Yeah, you'll get more value for your money buying a PC. But more than that even, because I'll tell you what, once you spec it out, that PC, if it's going to live up to their requirements, may end up costing as much as a Mac. But more to the point, you get more choice with a PC. Only one company makes Macs, Apple, and they pretty much decide what your choices are, and it's only a handful. But in the PC world, man, it seems like the choices are infinite. Do they say anything about memory, processor, hard drive?
Yes. For the processor, Intel Core 7600.
That's, wow. Oh, they're very specific. So they know that the i7-7600, which is a fairly high-end processor, is needed probably to run some software that they're going to need you to run. Do they say what software you're going to have to run?
Well, I'm not sure about the in detail about that, but the minimum processor requirement is Intel Core 1.5.
Oh, okay. See, the i5-7600 is about as high end as you can get. That's almost a 4 yeah. gigahertz. That's a very fast processor. So sometimes people think that you have to have the fast processor or the program won't work. It's not really that. It's really about how much time you'll wait for it to do things. And it isn't a matter of hours. It's a matter of minutes, sometimes of seconds. So if you're willing to spend $1,000 more, you can wait a minute less or 30 seconds less or 10 seconds less to do, you know, some big CAD drawing. I think, you know, you can decide to spend less, get an i5, as long as you understand that by spending less, you're going to spend more time rendering those mechanical drawings or whatever it is you're going to use. My suggestion would be get a solid state drive. I don't know if they mentioned that or not. Do they say how big?
They did.
Good. And do they say how big it needs to be?
256 gigabytes or better.
Okay. That's good. That's not huge. You probably do better with 512. You want it to last you 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. Solid state drive makes a difference in speed. It boots up faster. It loads programs faster. And again, it's speed. It's not that the stuff that you need won't work. If you can't afford a solid state drive or an i7 processor, it's not that you won't be able to do those things. It's just going to take you a little bit longer. And so you can make the decision, well, is money more important than time for you? And I think when you're just starting out as a student, often money is more important than time. So that's, you know, money's more important than time. Save money, spend time. People at my advanced age often realize how little time we have left. So we spend money to save time. You got all the time in the world. You're a kid. What else? What else do they recommend?
A 16 gigabytes memory.
Yes, good. That's because you're going to be using CAD software that's going to take a lot of RAM. Good. What else? That, by the way, will limit you. For instance, there are laptops that won't go to 16 gigs. They will only go to 8 gigs. So that's good to know. In fact, you may have to get the 7600U, the i7, to get 16 gigs. There's certain Intel chips that are required. There is an i5 that's required, but it might be an i7. So anyway, what else do they say you want?
There's either 17 or 15.6 display.
Oh, they want you to get a big display.
Yeah.
Wow, that's huge.
But a 15.6 display is acceptable.
Yeah, well, you don't need 17. Well, 17, it would be like you're carrying a pizza box to class. So I'd say 50. If you could, the reason they say that is because you're going to be doing in your mechanical engineering big things that you want to see more of, whether you're doing CAD/CAM or 3D design whatever you're doing. Your big screen will make a difference. But here's a little tip I'll give you. You can keep a big screen in your dorm room, a 27-inch display in your dorm room, and when you get back to the dorm room, plug in the laptop, and you'll have that big display. But I don't think you want to carry a 17-inch around. So save money, get the smaller screen, and if you need a big display, get an external display. You'll do better. See? Clever. This is why you called the tech guy. I would say, you know, for this, Dell is going to make some really good hardware. I'm a big fan of their XPS line. They're very light. They're good battery life. They really work well. And in a couple of years, when you become a advanced mechanical engineer, you can put Linux on it instead of Windows. You also, did they mention a graphics card at all? Did they say NVIDIA?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's interesting because, again, this is all based, I can tell you right now, this is all based on the software they're going to want you to use. And so these are really requirements of the software, not of necessarily the school, but just to use this software, you're going to want this. You could get by with an i5. It's just about time, and an i5 is a few percentage points slower than the i7. You can't get by with less than 16 gigs. You've got to have that. I would say 256 minimum, get a 512 gig solid state drive. Spend the money on that. Get the smaller screen. And then if you need a bigger screen later down the road, a display is a few a few hundred bucks. They're cheap. You can get a nice 27 or even bigger display and use that for your designs.
So
get an XPS 15 from Dell would be a perfect choice. You can configure it.
XPS 15.
Yep, that's a very good choice. Of course, Lenovo, I love their ThinkPads. They tend to be more expensive, but they're very good. And they're solid computers. You'd be hard-pressed to break them. Acer and Asus tend to offer lower cost but equally high performance machines. So if the price point for a Dell or a Lenovo is too high, take a look at Acer and Asus. Both make excellent computers. And these days, HP is making some very good computers too. That would be my fifth choice, though, on that list. Dell, Lenovo, Asus, Acer, and coming in at fifth, Hewlett-Packard. And have a great year! The computer's not as important as your brains. Bring your brains. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's exciting. How do you know that you want to be a mechanical engineer more than anything else?
Yeah.
How do you know that? Did you take it in high school?
Actually, throughout my life. Like, I've been building things, like, since I was
nice.
Five.
Fantastic. You're going to be doing something you're passionate about, you care about, right?
Right.
That's awesome. You know, and do you have a... I didn't ask on the air. We're not on the air anymore. Do you have a budget for that?
A budget? Sort of.
Like, I'm thinking $1,000 to $1,500 probably for what you just described.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Within that range, yeah.
You're going to get some help from your parents, I hope.
Yes.
Good. But it's their money, so you don't want to spend more than you have to.
Okay.
So where you can cut corners is the i5, not the i7. The i7's biggest advantage is it lets you, it has, it's hyper threading, has a slightly bigger L2 cache, which means it performs slightly faster. I mean, we're talking 10%, not a huge amount of time. We're talking a minute instead of a minute 6 seconds. Right? Big difference, right?
Cool. Yeah. Right.
So get an i5, save the money there, and put the money into a bigger drive. Make sure you get SSD. That makes such a difference in performance. And 16 gigs of RAM also make a difference in performance. And it may, in fact, be a requirement of the software you're going to use.
Right.
Okay. How exciting. What school are you going to?
Cal State Chico.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that. Yeah. Oh, now, here's the thing. That's a party school. I need you to buckle down and pay attention.
Right.
No partying, okay?
Okay.
All right. You're going to focus.
Exactly.
Right, Paul?
Right.
My
right.
son went to CU Boulder, which is the second biggest party school. Homework first. Homework right. before you party, okay?
Okay.
Homework first. But you know what? I don't think this is going to be a problem because you clearly love making things and building things. So you're going to be doing something you love. But there's
exactly.
going to be a lot of homework. And there may be some homework you don't love so much, like calculus, general ed classes.
Yeah.
You know, you may have to take some classes you're not as crazy about. Get them done first. Don't put them off.
Right.
Have a great time.
Okay, you too. Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Paul. Good luck. Congratulations.
All right.
Yeah. That's so cute. Statistics, maybe, yeah. I think that I'm glad they give them some specific recommendations. It sounds like a pretty good recommendations, too.
They've got a program.
They know what they're going to be using, yeah, yeah. Stay away from the girls. Nothing but trouble, says Marsworm. No, you got to get your heart broken at least once in college. That's part of the deal. Hey, isn't that right? Isn't that right, Dick DiBartolo?
That, you know, you were so excited for that kid.
I was more excited than he was.
you know, I'm going to buy a computer, too. I just have decided. It's time for me to.
I feel guilty because I have, you know, I'm in this lovely position where I just have all different kinds of stuff and gear and stuff. And, you know, I know when you're, you know, for him, this is a big tough
That's
decision.
A big, yeah. Yeah,
he
no,
gets
absolutely.
One. I got laptops up the wazoo.
Yeah. You went there on your vacation.
That's right, Wazoo, New Mexico.
One of the trips.
It's an
yeah,
incredible
exactly.
place.
Yeah, I saw those photos. Amazing.
Hey, it's the tech guy, Leo Laporte. And as always, this time of the day, we like to check in with Dick DiBartolo. 51 years, Mad's maddest writer. Were you Mad's maddest writer at the beginning? No, probably not.
No, I wasn't. And well, you know this from being a TV person. Everybody needs to have a hook, like
right.
you're the tech guy.
Right.
And I said, Gaines, I need a hook. I have to. He said, well, what do you want? I said, well, Don Martin's Mad's Maddest Writer. Can I be Mad's Maddest Artist? Can I be Mad's Maddest Writer? And he goes, let me see. God, you've been here long enough. You've certainly written enough satires. IW.
That must have been writer. A pretty good feeling, actually. To have Bill Gaines, W. Mad's Maddest Writer. That's awesome.
He was a sweetheart. He was so great.
And are you automatically in the usual gang of idiots? Is that just part of the deal?
Yes, it is. Yes, after you've dealt with Bill for a number of years, you are one of the usual gang of idiots. Correct.
So Dick is more than just Mad's Maddest Writer, although that seems like that would be enough for any human. He's also the Gizwiz, and I dub thee the Gizwiz because he
is a
gizmo-crazed wizard, and every week brings us one.
Yeah, looking for stuff that you may not have thought about. For example, Air Bar.
You know, no, what's that?
Oh, okay, great. Okay, because I'm always afraid you're going to say, oh, yeah, I have nine of them in this drawer.
Oh, I love the Air Bar. Okay.
So Air Bar is a little device, USB operated, that turns non-touchscreen laptops into a touchscreen computer.
Oh, that's it. So finally I could have touch on my Mac?
On your Mac. As a matter of fact, it was at Digital Focus where I saw this now 2 weeks ago, and they were at that event introducing it for the Mac. It had been available for the PC, and
well,
they
wait a minute.
Have.
How does this work?
You know what, Leo? All they would tell me is it uses light. That it puts light up from the little bar that's at the bottom of the screen. You can see it in that picture.
Ah, there's the air bar right there.
There's the air bar. Obviously, they make it in white for the Macs and black for the PCs. And I only got to play with it for a minute or so, but I drew my logo, wrote my name.
Do you have? You don't touch the screen. You don't need to, right? Do you touch
no,
the screen?
No, I mean, you're drawing on the screen.
So you're touching the screen, and the bar, it somehow knows where your finger is.
Exactly where your finger is. And you can see in that little demo there.
That's if you go to the Air Bar website, they have
Yeah, and it's a great website, air.bar.
Wow, I didn't know there was dot bar. I got to go get leo.bar.
Yeah, you
wow.
do.
Wow, gizwiz.bar. Wow. Yeah.
Let's go to the dot.
Let's go
bar.
To the.
So they make three sizes. For the PC, it's down to on Amazon. I looked early. It's down to $65.
What? Okay. Now you got to be honest with me. Did it really work? And was it like responsive?
At the show, it did. It did. Now a person over there who is playing with the Mac. He seemed to be saying, oh, you know, what am I doing wrong here? So I don't know about the Mac. I just played with the PC version, but it worked really well. And then you have to buy it to match your laptop. So they make a 13.3, a 14-inch, and a 15.6.
Because it has to go all the way across the screen.
Exactly. Yeah. And for Mac, they make it for the MacBook Air, the 13-inch version.
Wow. And okay, then, of course, so you have to have a MacBook Air for this.
$100.
Right. Wow. Very, very interesting. I think that's one of the things I've a little bit angry with Apple is they've just said, no, we're not going to put touch on Macintoshes. And I love touch. All my Windows computers, I always get touch.
Well, this is the way to do it, at least for the MacBook Air. Yeah.
Air Bar. Air.bar, and it's on Amazon. And it's less than $100. That's not bad. Well, Dickie D, you've done it again.
Good. I sit here and I shudder.
You blow me away. I don't know how you do it. You could knock me over with a feather. If you want to know more about this or any of the things that Dick talks about on our show and all the other shows he's on, because he's on a lot of shows, I wish I could get him exclusively, but I can't. Go to his website, giz. This is why I can't get him. giz.biz, gizwiz.biz. While you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest. It's a great chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine by identifying a close-up picture of a gizmo or gadget. Let's see what else. You also have lots of Mad memorabilia for sale. And as I mentioned last week, Good Days and Mad, the book.
Thank you. I sold three copies.
Did you?
Yeah.
You're rich.
Yeah, and only two people want their money back. So I'm one.
You're ahead.
Ahead.
Maybe. Thank you, Dickie D. Always
okay,
a pleasure.
Buddy. I'll see you next week.
We'll talk again next week. Last call of the day. Monica San Clemente. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. I have a question for you. I bought an Acer Chromebook.
Oh, nice. How do you like it?
I actually love it because it's all I really need. All I want it for is, you know, going on the internet, and instead of using Word or Excel, I just use the little doc that they have here, the Google Doc.
Yeah.
And it works great, actually. Yeah. It can totally do everything I want except for one thing, which is print. And I tried to get an answer out of the people at the computer store, and I couldn't really get a straight answer.
I'll give you the straight answer.
How to print, you
know? I'll give you the straight answer.
Excited.
So Google, for this particular product, invented something called Google Cloud Print.
Okay.
And the way you print, and you can do this from your phone, you can do this from anywhere, you can do this from work, from home. The idea of the Chromebook is it's untethered. You just carry it around and you're always on the network and you just use it whenever you want and you print wherever you want, even if you're not near a printer. So here's how they do it with Cloud Print. Now, in order for this to work, you have to have a Cloud Print capable printer.
Okay. You know what's funny is I had it work once.
Then you do.
My computer.
Then you do. So
no, but it's not a cloud printer. It's supposed to be a Wi-Fi wireless printer.
Yeah.
But not so, a cloud, I guess.
Well,
printed
no,
only one time.
No, many, almost all printers that are sold these days are cloud print capable. And the reason is this is one Google technology. Then there's AirPrint, which is Apple's version of this.
That's the one I don't have. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to look. When you get a printer, you should make sure that it supports Cloud Print and AirPrint and anything else you want to do. But that's okay. In addition to Wi-Fi printing. That's a separate technique. The computer does have to be networked because it has to be able to see the Google Cloud and say, oh, she wants to print. See, because the way this works is your Chromebook tells Google, print this document, and then Google tells your printer. Google's in the middle. So your computer does have to support it. Now, you got to look in the manual, or even if your computer, if your printer has a screen on it, browse through the settings, and you may find the Cloud Print. And what you'll have to do is log into your Google account on your printer.
Okay.
Just like you did on your computer. That attaches it. Then you have to add, then you, on your computer, on your Chromebook, you'll log into your Google account and just search for Google Cloud Print. You'll have to go into Cloud Print and say, add this printer.
Okay, and it does say that. It's on there, but it just won't print. So I don't understand what the problem, it won't show me the bar.
Yeah, and I'm not I can't help you much more than just the generic, this is how it works. Hang on for a second. We have to end the show. Thanks to Mike Cozy, our musical director, and Heather Hammond, our phone answer. Thanks to you, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. So let's continue on, Monica, because I don't want to leave you hanging here.
Thank you.
So you have, if you go to your Cloud Print settings, you see that printer in the setting. What kind of printer is it?
It's a Canon M, let me see, 3600. Hang on one sec. Let's see. Because when I go to the Cloud Print, it does show it.
Good.
Like it's there.
Yeah. That just means it's set up to work.
Yeah, it's an MG 5300, and it says it's currently offline. Ah. But it's not, because when I'm on my iPhone and I push print, it prints. No problem.
That's AirPrint, not Google Cloud Print. iPhones use AirPrint. Same stupid technology. I mean, same idea, but it's just not Google. So you have to go into the printer.
Okay.
By the way, it does support Cloud Print, so that's good news.
Okay.
But you just have to make sure it's set up in the printer. And just because it works with AirPrint doesn't mean it works with Cloud Print. So in the printer's settings, there will be a Google Cloud Print set up, because it needs to know what your Google account is.
Okay.
Remember, you're not printing to the printer. You're printing to Google, which then communicates with the printer.
Okay.
And Google can't communicate with the printer right now because you haven't set it up.
So I have to go into
printer settings.
Well, in the printer settings.
Yeah.
So is this online or on the printer itself?
I am looking at the Canon page. Pixma printer, Google Cloud Print setup. It's a feature, blah, blah, blah. For more information, it sends you to Google. And then it says, we'll be adding more Google Cloud Print setup guides shortly. which means never. So,
maybe I should get a different printer.
No. It supports it. It's fine. It works. You just have to, you're going to have to figure it out, because Canon apparently can't be bothered to write a manual to tell you how to do it. So but the good news is the MG 3600 does support it.
It's 5300.
Yeah. I'm seeing it right here. Not a problem. So
once I do connect it, it'll say it's online on Chromebook. Okay,
that's right.
So I'm looking for that to say currently online.
That's
for
right.
It to actually
that's
connect
right.
to my Google account.
And so really what it is, and I presume you never did this, is you have to get in the printer settings and attach it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it doesn't know, right?
Okay. And to get in the printer settings, because I'm totally not techie at all, even though I listen to you all the time, I have no idea. I have to go into the printer. So this is not something I look up online. I go into the printer to set it up.
Yeah, you have a little screen on your printer.
Yeah, like a
and a bunch
screen.
Of buttons. Yeah. And,
okay, and I'm looking to find.
In fact, I actually think that they have put a little help here. So here you go. Make sure your printer is switched on and connected to your network, and then your network has a working internet connection. I presume that's true.
Okay.
If illuminated, touch the home icon to display the home screen.
Okay.
Then you swipe left to display setup. And you tap the setup icon. It's all, you know what, I'll put a link online for this.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, on our Tech Guy site. But basically what you're going to do is in that setup, there's web service setup menu. And in that, there is a Google Cloud Print setup. and you're going to register with Google Cloud Print. So it's going to say, register this printer with Google Cloud Print, and you say yes.
Okay.
And then it's going to give you a – it's going to print out a page with a barcode on it or a QR code.
Okay.
And then you're going to use the Google Cloud Print app on your Chromebook or on your phone to scan that, and that will then register your printer. The fact that it's showing up in Cloud Print, you never did this?
No, I've never had anything like that.
I wonder how it got in your Cloud Print. Is anybody else using this?
No, I've been the only one that did it, and I only printed one time. I don't even know how, but it did with that printer. So I was surprised. I kept trying to do it, and it wouldn't light up. You know how it gets a bold writing when you're able to print? It's that gray, so it doesn't allow me to print. So there's nothing. And then I have a little app, I guess, whatever you want to call them, on my phone, on my Chromebook, that's the Google Cloud Print. And that whole thing is another, register this and do that and all kinds of stuff. So I don't know. I guess I'll go do that and see if it works. But
it's weird that it ever worked, and it's even weirder that it shows up on your Chromebook. Since you never, in fact, set it up.
I never set it up. I never went to the printer. Nothing. That's why I was like, do I even have the right printer?
You do.
It
works just fine.
I did it once.
It works just fine.
I don't know how.
So,
okay. So you're going to put a link on your website?
Yeah. We'll put a link. And you can, if you want to do it right now, just Google your printer and Google Cloud Print, and there's an online manual that walks you through it. But I bet you if you just go into your settings on your printer, you'll figure it out. You just have to browse through it. And it's a wireless connection setup page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
I bet you can figure this out. You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you for your time. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.